Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. Can you please all settle down now? Because we are going to start our meeting.
Also, there are member states on item 4, Vicky. So you want them to say that.
Yes. Okay. So I'd like to open now the seventh meeting of the seventh session of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. Distinguished members of the forum, distinguished observers, friends, ladies and gentlemen, there are still a lot of speakers from item 4, but we will deal with the speakers list after we deal with this panel and have the speakers on agenda item 7, which is discussion on indigenous languages, report of the International Expert Group meeting on indigenous languages. We have a panelist whom we will who will introduce the issue. And we will start with Mr. Lars Anders Baer, who is the member of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, after which we will call on the subsequent speakers. I'll ask Mr. Lars Anders Baer to please have the floor. You have the floor, Lars.
Madam Chairperson, allow me to give a brief presentation or introduction of the agenda item 7 on Indigenous languages. Indigenous peoples and their languages are threatened around the world. The loss of indigenous languages signifies not only a loss of traditional knowledge, but also the loss of cultural diversity and spirituality. The situation, there is a lack of awareness on the part of some governments, indigenous peoples, and the intergovernmental system of the urgency for policy measures to reverse this trend. Indigenous languages are treasures of waste traditional knowledge concerning ecological systems and processes, and how to protect and use some of the most vulnerable and biological diverse ecosystems in the world. It is not a coincidence that the areas where indigenous people live are the areas that contain the greatest biological diversity. In fact, biological, linguistic, and cultural diversity are inseparable and mutual reinforcing. So when an indigenous language is lost, so to its traditional knowledge for how to maintain aspects of the world's biological diversity. The protection of indigenous language is therefore not only a cultural and moral imperative, but an important aspect of global efforts to address biodiversity loss, climate change, and other environmental challenges. The year 2008 has been proclaimed by the General Assembly as the International Year of Languages. Responding to the need for a concrete public policy for protection and promotion of indigenous language, the United Nations Permanent Forum of Indigenous Issues at its sixth session recommended that the Economic and Social Council recognize the convening an international expert meeting on indigenous languages. At its regular session in July 2007, the Council approved the Forum's recommendation in decision 2007/244 to hold the meeting, which was organized later by the Secretariat for the Permanent Forum. The expert meeting took place in New York, April 21st to May the 2nd. Several members of the Permanent Forum attended the meeting together with invited experts, observers from departments, agencies, funds, and programs of the United Nations systems, observers from intergovernmental organizations, non-governmental organizations, and member states. On the 10th of January 2007, the workshop adopted by consensus the conclusions and recommendations. The report and the recommendation from the expert meeting can be found in ECOSOC document E/C-19/2008/3, and this is also available back in the room. In the report, it is underlined that language rights must be implemented as a collective and as an individual right. Madam Chairperson, during the expert meeting, a number of examples of good practices ranging from the university programs to child centers to political movements were presented. Regarding challenges, gaps, and concerns, the report emphasized that language rights are a part of cultural rights, are inadequately organized in many countries. Language rights as a part of cultural rights are also integrated elements of the rights to self-determination. and should be viewed within the context of the universal, interdependent and complementary nature of human rights. For example, customary laws of indigenous peoples and communities are often in their own languages. And if the language is lost, the community may not fully understand its laws and system of governance. Loss of languages is also undermines the identity and the spirituality of the communities and the individuals. The expert meeting also emphasized the importance of looking at language rights from an holistic perspective, and that language rights cannot be fully enjoyed if the absence of other basic human rights, health, dissent, work, or self-determination. The expert meeting also noted that some states are seeking revitalization, preservation, and promotion of indigenous languages, but language programs are frequently underfunded, while smaller language communities struggle to receive any funds at all. Madam Chairperson, the expert meeting adopted a number of recommendations. Among others, it recommended that the international community should begin drafting a convention to protect indigenous languages, identities and the rights, and establishing international instruments to collect information and pursue violation related to language, culture and the indigenous rights, both in the public and in the private sector, such as establishing an authority on language rights and a rapporteur, a commissioner or agency on language discrimination. Madam Chairman, finally I want to highlight the expert paper prepared for the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues about form of education of indigenous children as a crime against humanity. The paper E/C 19/2008/7 is available both electronically and on paper, and it should also be in the back of the room. The present expert paper was submitted by Robert Dunmar, a reader of Law and Celtic, the University of Aberdeen, United Kingdom, Kingdom, Dr. Tuve Skutkab-Kangas, the Åbo Academy, University of Vasa, Finland, in collaboration with Lars-Anders Mer-Bär, the current member of and Ole Henrik Magga, former member of the chair and the chair of the Permanent Forum. In the paper, the following conclusion was drawn. Firstly, state education policy very frequently forces indigenous children whose mother tongue is in an indigenous language into education through the medium of the dominant state language. These policies play an important role in the process of language shift. One effect on the indigenous language themselves, they are underdeveloped in more formal areas because they are not used in schools. Another effect is the attitudes. Children and parents tend to start believing that their language is worth less than the dominant language. Secondly, The harmful consequences of these, of the dominant state languages as the only language of instructions in the school is more extensive. The use of the children's language has often been either overtly or commonly forbidden. The separation most obviously when children have been removed from home and placed in residential schools also occurs when all or most of the teachers is coming from the dominant groups and do not speak the indigenous language. Such policies have often resulted not only in serious physical harm, but also in very serious mental harm, social dislocation, psychological, cognitive and linguistic and educational harm, and particularly through these also economic, social and political marginalization. Indigenous and other minority students experience the lowest rates of educational attainment, the lowest family incomes, and particularly among indigenous youth, the highest rates of depression and teen suicides. It is now clear that the governments are often aware of these and other adverse effects of forcing indigenous children to be educated through the medium of the dominant languages. The states persist in such a policy, given such a knowledge has been described as a form of or cultural genocide, or, in the words of Rodolfo Stavenhagen, the rapporteur of indigenous rights, ethnocide. Here we consider the possibility that such policies, implemented in the full knowledge of their devastating effects, constitutes international crimes, including genocide within the means of the United Nations 1948 Convention on Prevention and Punishment of Crime of Genocide, or a crime against humanity. In this paper, the experts have considered that the extent to which such education as above described can consider to amount to genocide or crime against humanity. The concept of which crimes of humanity provides a good basis for an evolution that will ultimately lead to the stigmatizations through laws of subjective education practices and policies. In the paper, it is recommended that the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues consider what action might be taken on this basis, taking in consideration what is outlined in the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples concerning indigenous languages. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lars Anders Behr, the expert member of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, who has presented the results of the expert group meeting, but also the paper on indigenous languages prepared by experts on this issue. I'd like now to call on Her Excellency Ms. Lourdes Tiban Guala, the Secretaria Ejecutiva Nacional, Consejo de Desarrollo de las Nacionalidades y Pueblos del Ecuador. You have the floor, Madam.
Gracias, señora presidenta y estimados asistentes. Tukuikunata ajichishi hari warmikunata. Tenemos derecho a los idiomas, pero todavía no derecho a la traducción. Por eso voy a hablar en español. Yo quisiera más bien ir a casos muy concretos. Tengo una ponencia muy larga, pero en honor al tiempo, voy a tratar simplemente de resumir algunas de las buenas prácticas que hemos comenzado a implementar en base a la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas. Yo soy una de las mujeres que creo que todos los avances que los pueblos indígenas van haciendo, tenemos la posibilidad de ponerlo en práctica. Los derechos constitucionales, en el caso ecuatoriano, desde el artículo 1, al establecer que el Estado ecuatoriano es pluricultural y multiétnico, nos permite comenzar a caracterizar a ese Ecuador diverso, pero también específicamente un Ecuador pluricultural y multiétnico, en donde la lengua también se ve visibilizado desde el lado de la pluralidad lingüística. Desde ese punto de vista, nuestra Constitución es muy rica al reconocer el quichua y la lengua shuar como lenguas oficiales, pero ahí tenemos un límite que dice solo entre pueblos indígenas. Tenemos derecho a la calidad educativa y dice que tenemos derecho a una educación intercultural bilingüe, y lo tenemos durante 20 años un sistema de educación bilingüe con algunas virtudes y con algunos aciertos, pero también es cierto que tenemos algunas deficiencias, lo cual no voy a profundizar porque ese no es el tema. Tenemos también el derecho constitucional a establecer circunscripciones territoriales indígenas, en donde, como el primer elemento a reconstituir y a fortalecer, serán los idiomas indígenas. En todo caso, quiero manifestarles que a partir de la nueva Constitución hemos ido defendiendo desde el proceso de los pueblos indígenas las lenguas de los pueblos indígenas y tratamos, de alguna manera, de visibilizar a través de algunas instituciones y procesos que lo tenemos en el Ecuador. Dentro de esos procesos quiero citar como uno de los logros más importantes entonces de la lucha indígena es el derecho que tienen los pueblos indígenas a educarse en su propia lengua. De ello, muchos han criticado que es una educación mediocre, que es una educación, sí es cierto, nos han dejado sin mucho presupuesto, pero producto de ello soy yo, por ejemplo, soy la primera alumna del sistema de educación intercultural bilingüe Jatari Unancha, de un sistema en donde muchos critican porque los indígenas no sabemos hacer letra de molde, porque no sabemos escribir con claridad. Pero lo que sí nos da la educación en lengua propia es valorar nuestra identidad, es valorar nuestra sabiduría, es valorar nuestros territorios, es decir, nos ayuda a construir la ideología de los pueblos indígenas. Eso es lo fundamental cuando hablamos de educación en propia lengua. Por otro lado, solamente voy a citar tres o cuatro elementos que hemos hecho, señora presidenta. A partir del mes de septiembre, cuando la Asamblea a nosotros nos permitió tener la Ley de Instituciones Indígenas a través del Congreso Nacional, el 11 de septiembre del 2007, logramos tener una Ley de Instituciones Indígenas por primera vez. El Congreso del Ecuador reconoce una legislación indígena. Y a los dos días logramos tener la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas. Complementando esos dos instrumentos jurídicos, hemos logrado en el mes de noviembre crear la Comisión Nacional de Estadísticas y Censos para Pueblos Indígenas y Afroecuatorianos. Esta es una nueva experiencia en el caso ecuatoriano. Queremos verdaderamente saber cuántos indígenas somos, pero eso cuánto tenemos que medirlo junto con los pueblos indígenas y que no el gobierno o el Estado por sí sola pueda decir que somos del 6%. Entonces vamos a participar en el censo, estamos trabajando y ahí vamos a trabajar el tema de lenguas también, que es muy importante, cuántas lenguas somos y quiénes somos y en dónde estamos y en qué territorios estamos. A partir también de la declaración, hemos logrado, en el mes de diciembre del 2007, desde el CODEMPE, crear por primera vez, y ese es uno de los logros más importantes en la implementación de la declaración, algo que la Constitución del 98 nos dice, derecho de los pueblos indígenas a informarse en todo caso judicial en lengua indígena. Pero hasta hoy nadie, ninguna institución ha implementado. A través de los contactos que tengo, soy profesora de una universidad a nivel de posgrados. Entonces tuve la oportunidad de, en el mes de diciembre, proponer al Ministerio Público de que se cree instancias en donde la justicia llegue desde los espacios del Estado hacia los pueblos indígenas en lengua materna. Orgullosamente, hasta este sábado, hemos inaugurado en 5 provincias del país unidades de fiscalías indígenas al interior del Ministerio Público. Este es un caso particular en donde vamos a efectivizar el pluralismo jurídico y nosotros aspiramos que el solo hecho de que hemos puesto los fiscales, el Estado ecuatoriano deberá continuar con esa política de crear juzgados con personal indígena, tribunales penales con personal indígena, porque es importante que la lengua entonces se transversalice no solamente entre indígenas. Tenemos que lograr que la lengua indígena sea escuchada también en donde no son indígenas y caso particular tenemos que nuestro presidente constitucional de la República habla quichua y está perfeccionando y eso yo creo que nos va a permitir de que esa lengua que ha sido menospreciado, que ha sido, si es que habla un indígena, el quichua, es como un indígena muy retrasado del siglo pasado. Cuando un indígena habla inglés en el Ecuador, es un indígena muy inteligente. Entonces, eso tenemos que cambiar. El inglés, el español y las lenguas indígenas tienen que ser valorados de la misma manera. Por eso es que nosotros hemos instaurado entonces las fiscalías indígenas, pero que el profesional que va a atender ahora los juicios serán indígenas quichua hablantes, o en algunos casos shuaras o de la lengua que sea en el territorio respectivo. Nos queda al Consejo de Desarrollo de los Pueblos Indígenas seguir trabajando en la medida de que tenemos que ir demostrando qué tan teóricos somos y qué tan prácticos somos. Mientras esté presidiendo ese consejo, para mí, les digo públicamente y con esto termino, se me hace tan difícil dejar de ser CONAIE, dejar de ser movimiento indígena para hablar hoy como gobierno. Lo que sí quiero decir es que la propuesta de la plurinacionalidad a través del pedido del movimiento indígena, la propuesta de la interculturalidad, va a ser el momento histórico cuando se incluye en la Constitución, y desde ahí, como Lourdes Tibán o como cualquier otro personaje del movimiento indígena, vamos a tener un gran compromiso de poner en hechos lo que significa la plurinacionalidad, visto desde el autogobierno para pueblos indígenas, visto desde el fortalecimiento territorial, visto desde el cuidado de los recursos naturales ahora en este tema de cambio climático, visto desde las circunscripciones territoriales indígenas, visto desde el pluralismo jurídico. Eso es la plurinacionalidad, y frente a esto, la lengua materna o el idioma o los derechos lingüísticos, no importa cómo le tratemos, será el elemento fundamental el que tengamos que fortalecer si queremos hablar de aquí a 100 años, a 200 años más, si queremos seguir hablando de los pueblos indígenas. Deberemos hoy poner en práctica para que nuestra generación sea responsable con lo que vendrá después. Muchísimas gracias.
I would like to thank Her Excellency, Madame Lourdes Tibán, for her excellent presentation. Thank you, Madame, for your wonderful remarks. The next speaker on the panel and we are dealing with Indigenous languages today is Madame Rochelle Roca Hashim, and she is representing UNESCO. Madame, you have the floor.
Afternoon. Am I on? Thank you. Dear Chair and members of the Permanent Forum, I'm very honored to be here today representing UNESCO. And in particular, I'm very pleased that we have taken the initiative to spend a half day of the Permanent Forum discussing the very important issue of Indigenous languages. Internationally, we've seen a growing focus on, a growing trend to look at languages. They're growing in importance. They're drawing a lot more of attention. And we need to tap into this momentum, which is what we're particularly doing this afternoon. We need to use this opportunity, and many others like it, to generate more awareness raising and to generate more action, particularly with our governments and member states, on behalf of Indigenous languages. So I'm really glad that we have a half day dedicated to this, and I hope we continue to do this in future sessions of the forum. As you all know, we just had the wonderful adoption by the General Assembly of the UN on the 13th of September of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. I want to remind you that only 4 months before that, on the 16th of May, 2007, the same UN General Assembly adopted a resolution on multilingualism that invites member states and the UN system and all other relevant stakeholders, and I'll quote, to develop, support, and intensify activities aimed at fostering respect for and the promotion and protection of all languages, in particular endangered languages, linguistic diversity, and multilingualism. This resolution also proclaimed 2008 to be the International Year of Languages. So once again, you can see that this drawing international focus on languages, because now even we have an International Year of Languages this year. I want to refer to both of these decisions, which appear indeed almost simultaneous in the context of the long-term international schedule, because their concurrence provides evidence of this powerful trend that is highly beneficial to the cause of indigenous peoples. In spite of the undeniable difference of the importance and the nature between the declaration and between this UN resolution on multilingualism, we have to see that the policy and program access that we should develop to implement them is complementary. Languages are a vehicle of knowledge, a tool for communication and inclusion, an expression of identity, and an expression of our diversity. In recent years, several statements and standard-setting instruments have testified to a growing awareness of the importance of languages and the issues involved with them at the international level. As a starting point of this common trend, I wish to recall the Declaration of Vienna of the World Conference on Human Rights of 1993, which affirmed the right for, and I quote, persons belonging to minorities to use their own language, end of quote. Subsequent examples include the call of the General Assembly of the UN for more attention to multilingualism, resolutions from the General Assembly focusing on the preservation and protection of all languages, and the report of the Secretary General of the UN at its 58th session in 2003. At UNESCO, a number of normative tools also addressing language issues and explicitly mentioning indigenous peoples have been developed during this same period. These include the UNESCO Universal Declaration on Cultural Diversity and its Action Plan of 2001, the Convention for the Safeguarding of the Intangible Cultural Heritage of 2003, the Recommendation on the Promotion and Use of Multilingualism and Universal Access to Cyberspace, 2003, and the Convention on the Protection and Promotion of the Diversity of Cultural Expressions, 2005. The need to address this matter is becoming more acute under the pressure of accelerating globalization. We're all aware of this. We see languages with their complex implications in terms of identity and social integration, both globally and in particular locally. These are of strategic importance. Processes related to globalization have also increased the pace at which languages are disappearing, thereby leading to an immeasurable loss for both linguistic and cultural diversity. Indigenous and minority languages, amounting to more than 5,000 languages in over 70 countries in six continents, nearly 75% of all languages believed to exist, are particularly vulnerable to this trend. Following the proclamation of the International Year of Languages, the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, if considered really specifically in a linguistic aspect, is a landmark achievement in this long historical process. The Declaration acknowledges the significant place that indigenous cultures occupy in the world's cultural landscape and their vital contribution to our rich cultural diversity, which constitutes the common heritage of humanity. By safeguarding the diversity of cultures, the Declaration endorses languages as expressions of that diversity. It further supports the promotion and, where necessary, the specific protection of languages as a cultural and, more fundamentally, as a human phenomenon. More specifically, its Article 13 affirms the right of indigenous people, I quote, to revitalize, use, develop, and transmit to future generations their histories, languages, oral traditions, philosophies, writing systems, and literatures, and to designate and retain their own names for communities, places, and persons. The Declaration does not limit itself, however, to the language as cultural heritage perspective. In fact, it asserts in Article 14 the rights of indigenous peoples to establish and control their educational systems and institutions, providing education in their own languages. A third perspective, that of language as a prime vehicle of communication, socialization, and public life is reflected in Article 16 of the Declaration, which states the right of indigenous people to establish their own media in their own languages. In summary, the Declaration sets promising international standards for the protection and promotion of the rights of indigenous peoples within the larger human rights framework, and more specifically, it highlights their rights related to culture, identity, and education. In this sense, indeed, it echoes the principles of UNESCO's Universal Declaration on Cultural Diversity and the several UNESCO conventions in the field of culture, all of which recognize the pivotal role of indigenous peoples as custodians of cultural, linguistic, and biological diversity, embodied in the culture and natural heritage, as well as in languages. The consequences of the Declaration for UNESCO and for all of its partners are numerous, both in the policy and at the program levels. At UNESCO, this is particularly so in the positive context of our medium-term strategy, which is newly adopted from 2008 to 2013. We are going to visit for the next 6 years a specific strategy that identifies now indigenous issues as one of our priority areas for our work. As regards policy, the Declaration shows convergence, as I said, with all UNESCO instruments supporting cultural diversity, so that the implementation of our many standard-setting instruments should progress in synergy with the implementation of the Declaration. There are here many opportunities to promote the rights and aspirations of indigenous peoples, namely in the fields of tangible and intangible cultural heritage and multilingualism and intercultural education, both formal and non-formal. For instance, on languages and education, the 2003 UNESCO position paper called Education in a Multilingual World, with its three principles supporting, first, mother tongue instruction, second, bilingual and multilingual education, and third, intercultural education, was specifically designed to draw attention of the member states, especially those wishing to develop a policy that promotes multilingual education. The emphasis is on mother tongue-based bilingual education. That is to say, the use of mother tongue first language as the medium of instruction in the early years of schooling and possibly at all levels of education. A supplementary opportunity for discussing policy matters has been offered by one of our executive board decisions at UNESCO, requiring a preliminary study on a new standard-setting tool in this field. Vital as they are, however, national and international legal measures alone may prove insufficient to ensure the preservation of indigenous languages. As put by McCarty and Watahomiji, in practice, language rights have not guaranteed language maintenance, which ultimately depends on the home language choices of native speakers. Fully aware of this pitfall, UNESCO has, over the past decades, developed a wide range of programmatic activities designed to complement and reinforce the existing standard-setting instruments. In the present biennium for UNESCO, 2008 and 2009, the Indigenous Issues priority of our midterm strategy has been translated into a rich interdisciplinary program cutting across science, culture, education, communication. Some initiatives focus on raising awareness of the convergence between the different normative instruments that I mentioned, which also relate to the Declaration, or on the special training for policymakers in particular and programmers such as UN staff. Others concern the principles of cultural diversity and dialogue as factors to be taken into account in the project cycle. Still others focus on indigenous peoples' rights to education through the safeguarding and promotion of indigenous cultures, languages, knowledge, traditions, and identity. And in this context, it is relevant to mention UNESCO's guidelines on inclusive education. Also in our work, we aim to enable indigenous peoples to participate more fully and completely equally in the national and international community. Some of the intersectoral programs I want to highlight from UNESCO include a program on linking cultural and biological diversity, where indigenous knowledge systems about nature and the universe play an important role, notably through the related links or local and indigenous knowledge systems program and the program on small island states. We also have a program on education for sustainable development, which includes the objective to channel into education policy and curricula indigenous peoples' knowledge, pedagogies, and views. The Platform on Languages, which has identified indigenous languages as a key area of focus, notably as they represent vehicles for indigenous knowledge and practices and a major factor to access to quality learning opportunities. UNESCO also has a platform on dialogue among civilizations and cultures, which includes dialogue with indigenous peoples and components related to media and intercultural education. And last, we have examples of good material being translated into indigenous languages, adjusted to local contexts, and disseminated through training workshops, like the Advocacy Toolkit for Promoting Multilingual Education developed by our Bangkok office. As you can see, in UNESCO's work, the standard-setting tools are undeniably important, but operational projects, namely in the field, are essential to effective advancement in this area, and there must be synergy between the two. Broader effectiveness also requires joining all existing resources and all the stakeholders, be they indigenous peoples, the wider civil society, professional associations, individual experts, agencies, and our member states. These must have a focus on indigenous peoples as actors of culture, subjects of rights, speakers of unique languages, and much more. It is therefore by launching a call for synergy, a call for our joint activities, joint ventures, for a shared strategy, that I would like to conclude my speech and move on to other speakers. Indigenous languages are an important component of really what is a bigger issue. To meet the challenges of ensuring the world's underserved populations, including indigenous peoples, are fully respected and have their place, one thing above all is essential and strategic: that in our support for a specific domain, each of us keeps alive a strong linkage with the whole and with the broader issue. This means, for example, that the mutually reinforcing work on behalf of cultural, biological, and linguistic diversity at UNESCO cannot be fully effective if other challenges, like the one for indigenous peoples' rights, are not won at the UN and elsewhere. Thank you very much.
I would like to thank Ms. Rochelle Roca-Hahim, Program Specialist for UNESCO, for her very excellent contribution to this panel. The next speaker on my list is Mr. Richard Grounds, the Director of the Uchi Language Project. And I give you the floor, Mr. Grounds.
Basan, Senga Inla, Antedit Neche, Sanle Abe, Sedo Shanle Abe, Gohantane de Pule, Agasanle Weyowa, Nedit Neche, Sanle, Gohantane, Gochatlago Wedene Ha, Weyowa, Akein, Gohaha Hene, Akein, Hongeni Yujihane no Songkene no. I'm speaking to you in our Yuchi language. I'm greeting you in the language of our elders. I'm giving you my name, Richard Grounds, from the Yuchi Nation in Oklahoma. And I'm reminding you of what our elders tell us, that our gifts, our languages, are like gifts from the Creator. Our languages have been given to us by the Creator. And that's how our elders speak. And the last comment that I gave to you was something that one of our beloved elders in the community, Mose Kawi, often said when he spoke to the Creator to begin his prayers. Yuchihaneno, son keneno. We Yuchi people, we're still here. I'm speaking to you in a language that's now only spoken by 5 fluent elders. Only 5 people on the planet who are first language, who grew up speaking Yuchi as their first language. And that's why it's so important, so rich, to hear our elders say, Yuchihaneno, son keneno. We're still here. But our goal, our task, is to make it so that our young people, our children coming up behind, will also be able to say, Yuchihaneno, son keneno. But I don't say this just as a way to focus on the Yuchi situation. Sadly, we are not alone. Our neighbors all around us are in very poor shape, trying to keep their languages going. The Sauk language, the Quapaw language, the proud Osage Nation, the Wichitas, the original inhabitants in what became the state of Oklahoma. Many others have literally less than 5 speakers of their language. In fact, it has become such a difficult situation. There was a report that came out back in September, a study that was done that was carried in the New York Times, U.S. News and World Report, and other outlets that showed Oklahoma, my home state, where our people are now at, as one of the 5 worst places on the planet where languages are being lost. When I first came to the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, the first year at the first Permanent Forum, there were 27 languages that were still spoken by Indigenous nations within the borders of the state of Oklahoma. Now there's only 23 instead of 27. What this loss of language does for us is helps us to get very clear about what the most critical issues are. We must be about passing the knowledge, the history, the heritage, the understanding of our communities and our ceremonies, all of this rich tradition that's carried by our languages has to be passed to the young people in the community, for they are our future. So I come here today to speak especially on behalf of these smallest languages, to call attention to those who have been subjected to generations of physical genocide followed by cultural genocide. The primary mechanism for this loss of language was through a boarding school system in which every indigenous nation, every clan, every community, in fact, every family, every child in every family was sought out to be put into a boarding school with the intended purpose, the express purpose, of breaking the line of tradition in which that knowledge of the language, in which the songs that had been passed down from time immemorial, that line would be stopped. So that now we're in this very difficult situation. I give you the latest stats from K. David Harrison, about the global situation on our languages. Of the 6,600 languages in the world, in the way that he has identified them, the smallest languages, 3,586 languages, are spoken, that is, well over half of the world's languages, are spoken by only 0.2% of the world's population. That means less than 1% of the world's population is speaking well over half of the world's languages. Less than, not only less than 1%, but less than one half of 1%. This is the richness. This is the diversity. This is the gift that our indigenous people bring to the world. As has been already mentioned, the indigenous languages represent about 5 out of 6 languages on the planet. And so it is our task, it is our challenge to make sure that we empower indigenous communities to be able to pass that knowledge forward, to be able to get the language to the young people. I mentioned the boarding school process, which was carried out extensively in some of the wealthiest, now wealthiest nation states in the U.S., Canada, Australia, other places. These systems represented the investment of literally millions of dollars systematically applied for generations with the purpose of stopping the languages. Now, since we have had so much help, shall we say, getting into this trouble, having this problem now of just handfuls of speakers, we also need lots of help to bring our languages back. We need funding. We need technical resources. We need partners. And all of our indigenous brothers and sisters and separate nations must work together. But at the same time, I especially want to call attention to these smallest languages who are at the closest edge to going over the brink of being lost essentially forever. And in saying this, I think we need to have some clarity about what the processes are that will keep our languages alive. I don't think simply recording a few words, writing a few phrases down is going to save our languages. Many of the academic projects, much of the funding is invested in saving snippets, pieces, maybe postcard snapshots. What we want, what we need in our communities, what our goal is to keep alive our languages so that our young people will have breath-to-breath knowledge of their traditions, of their ceremonies, of their medicines, of the stars, of the history of their own peoples, their own families, their relationship to other communities outside their own nation. This is the world's wealth that is carried by indigenous languages, including, of course, very specialized knowledge about how to live in specific environments, how to live in the land. All of this wealth, all of this richness is at great risk of being lost. So I would challenge UNESCO and other agencies to make a special effort during this year of 2008, when we have an international year focusing on languages, to also especially pay attention to these smallest languages, to the least of these, who may, in terms of total population numbers, represent a very small number, in fact, less than half of 1%, representing, on the other hand, the actual greatest and widest diversity of cultures, of languages, of traditions, of rich heritage. So that we need some kind of a triage, a plan to take care of those who are closest to the edge of being lost, those that are in most urgent need of assistance. So that it seems to me that we cannot afford, particularly with these smallest languages, to allow the investment from funders, perhaps from governments or foundations, to only go to scholarly projects that are not paying attention to the needs of the community. It is a surprise, perhaps to many of you, to think about what I think is a reality, that the academic project, the goals of the academy, often do not correspond very well with the needs of the community. Our goal is to keep our languages alive, spoken, understood, used, carried forward to future generations. And many of the projects that are done are absorbing significant resources to do things that are of scholarly interest. And I don't say they are unimportant, but they're secondary. And we must have attention and focus on projects that will take care of our youth, our future voice. And I think, yes, we do need technical support. We do need access to some resources. But again, it has to be understood and directed and used as a tool. The recording of the language in and of itself will not produce new speakers, will not grow new young people who understand their heritage, their culture, their traditions, and pass them forward. So it's critical that we empower our communities, we provide them with resources. This would include a whole new level of funding, particularly paying attention to these smallest languages. And yes, it would include some types of technical support so that they can be effective in passing forward their knowledge, but not totally reliant on these quick fix technological solutions. So we have to be smart. We have to work together. We have to celebrate our diversity. And we must think about the future generations. What are the best ways to carry forward the knowledge of our history, our traditions, so that they continue as part of our living communities, not simply some form of, shall we say, intellectual colonialism? We must continue to keep our languages alive. Yujiha ne no, son ke ne no, kedate.
Thank you very much to Mr. Richard Grounds, and thank you, Mr. Grounds, for sharing with us the triage that must be developed to preserve indigenous languages. The final speaker on our list of panelists is Mrs. Ana Lucia D'Amelio. She is the Senior Advisor for Education and Excluded Populations with the United Nations Children Fund. Mrs. D'Amelio, my honor to give you the floor.
Thank you very much. Estimados miembros del foro permanente, representantes de los gobiernos, de los pueblos indígenas y de la sociedad civil, quisiera en esta breve presentación tocar algunos elementos relativos al uso de las lenguas indígenas desde la perspectiva de UNICEF y empezaré obviamente con el ámbito educativo para después pasar a otros ámbitos. ¿Por qué las lenguas indígenas en la educación? Hace más de 18 años, aún antes del convenio 169 de la OIT y antes, obviamente, de la Declaración sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, otro instrumento reconocía el derecho de los niños indígenas de recibir una educación en su lengua materna, la Convención sobre los Derechos del Niño, ratificada por casi todos los países del mundo, siendo el instrumento que ha tenido más ratificaciones. Asumir, por lo tanto, como hace el artículo 30 de la Convención sobre los Derechos del Niño, que no se le debe negar a un niño indígena el derecho de usar su lengua y practicar su cultura, es un compromiso que los Estados ya han asumido hace mucho tiempo. Es además preciso constatar que aquí no se trata de un derecho particular para un grupo particular de niños, pues al contrario, se trata de reconocer al niño o a la niña indígena el mismísimo derecho que tienen los demás niños de poder expresarse y comunicarse en una lengua, en su lengua materna. De hecho, a nadie se le ocurriría impedir o prohibir, porque de eso se ha tratado por mucho tiempo, el derecho de usar el inglés en una escuela pública de Estados Unidos o el italiano en Italia. Esta es la equidad que permite la igualdad. Creemos que de eso se trata este artículo 30 de la Convención. Asumir el enfoque de derecho tiene varias implicaciones, tales como, primero, el ejercicio de un derecho no puede estar condicionado al número de hablantes de una determinada lengua. Un niño candoshi de la Amazonía peruana tiene el mismo derecho al uso de su lengua en la educación que un niño quechua, independientemente que los primeros sean solo un millar de personas y los, en el segundo caso hablamos de más de 10 millones de personas. Y en este caso, Richard, UNICEF está trabajando con pueblos también cuya lengua está en extinción. Es el caso, por ejemplo, del apoyo que estamos brindando a los Añú de Venezuela. Otro punto, el ejercicio de un derecho no puede estar condicionado al costo económico. Demasiadas veces escuchamos hablar de las dificultades y los altos costos para proveer servicios básicos en comunidades indígenas. Varios estudios al respecto han evidenciado que la educación bilingüe ha permitido disminuir la repetición y el abandono escolar, que cuesta muchísimo a los gobiernos. En América Latina el promedio de repetición es de 6.5%. Es decir, es posible que los gobiernos gastan más por no ofrecer educación bilingüe y en lengua materna que por garantizarla. Tercero, en línea con el enfoque de derecho, UNICEF trabaja tanto con los estados, es decir, los garantes de los derechos, como con los mismos indígenas y sus organizaciones, es decir, los titulares de estos derechos. Los primeros deben fortalecer su capacidad de proveer servicios en las lenguas indígenas y respetuosos de las culturas indígenas. Los segundos, incluyendo a los niños, deben fortalecer su capacidad de reclamar y defender sus derechos según los mecanismos existentes. Y en este diferente ámbitos estamos trabajando. ¿Por qué la educación en lengua materna y bilingüe para los niños indígenas? Las evaluaciones han demostrado que un niño aprende mejor en su lengua. Sin embargo, me parece importante enfatizar una vez más que, más allá de una estrategia para mejorar la calidad de la educación, el uso de las lenguas indígenas es esencialmente un derecho. Ahora bien, los que se oponen a la educación en lengua materna y bilingüe suelen decir que es cara, que es compleja y que es políticamente sensible. Y los opositores no están solo en las filas de los gobiernos, como a menudo pensamos. Muchas veces ocurre lo mismo en las instituciones que representamos aquí y entre los donantes. En América Latina, la educación bilingüe en unas cuantas décadas se ha modificado muchísimo. En los años 50 y 60 estaba fuertemente asociada a prácticas evangelizadoras y en la que la lengua materna era solo un puente hacia la castellanización. Sin embargo, a inicio y después de los años 70 ha ido evolucionando en su concepción, asociándosela a la dimensión cultural. Se habla, por lo tanto, de educación intercultural bilingüe. Y la dimensión del mantenimiento y fortalecimiento y desarrollo de las lenguas indígenas concernidas, es decir, entre otras cosas, su mantenimiento a lo largo de todo el periodo de escolaridad. Además, para muchos pueblos indígenas en muchos países de América Latina, en los años 80 y 90, la educación intercultural bilingüe se ha convertido en un espacio de ejercicio del poder y desde donde se ponían en cuestionamiento las relaciones de poder existentes. Son muchas las evaluaciones que han demostrado que los niños aprenden mejor en su lengua y que además, fortaleciendo el uso de sus lenguas en el proceso de la lectoescritura, tienen más facilidad para ir aprendiendo una segunda lengua. Muchas evaluaciones también muestran que la educación bilingüe ha permitido grandes avances en la esfera psicoafectiva. En las escuelas bilingües los niños aprenden con más alegría, son más expresivos y tienen una mejor autoestima cuando se lo compara a los niños que no están en escuela bilingüe. Y esto es calidad de la educación. Y sin embargo es necesario tomar en cuenta que pese a la convención y pese a los otros instrumentos ratificados, y pese a que muchos países ya cuentan con marcos legales muy avanzados y con profesionales indígenas altamente calificados, el uso de las lenguas indígenas y de las modalidades bilingües en la educación aún está limitado y no cubre la totalidad de las comunidades o de las poblaciones que la necesitan. Aún en América Latina no hay ningún país que haya logrado la universalización de la educación bilingüe e intercultural a la niñez indígena de ese país. Por otro lado, a menudo estas modalidades se implementan con el apoyo de fondos de la cooperación internacional, con escasos recursos nacionales de los gobiernos. E inclusive en aquellos países que sí han asignado buenos recursos, en estos últimos años han disminuido. Esta gran dependencia en términos financieros pueden tener consecuencias muy negativas, pues se corre el riesgo que al final esta modalidad esté percibida como modalidad externa e impuesta desde afuera. Y el riesgo es que la Declaración de París, en este caso, se convierte en una limitación para los pueblos indígenas en aquellos países donde no tienen espacio de participación dentro de las instituciones del Estado que negocian con la cooperación internacional. En este momento, UNICEF está apoyando proyectos o programas de educación intercultural bilingüe en casi 20 países de América Latina. En aspectos y del Caribe, en aspectos específicos que varían según los países. Esto es posible gracias al apoyo de varios donantes. También se están incrementando las intervenciones para aquellos pueblos indígenas divididos por fronteras internacionales. Y al respecto quiero agradecer el apoyo que nos brinda el gobierno de España para 17 países de la región, así como otros gobiernos, el gobierno finlandés para 3 países de la región. Pero la educación no es suficiente. La educación por sí sola no puede cambiar la situación de diglosia y de bajo prestigio en la que se encuentran la mayoría de las lenguas indígenas. La escuela por sí sola no puede hacer mucho, sino es que se acompañan muchas otras medidas en relación al uso de las lenguas en el ámbito público, en los tribunales, en los servicios de salud y sobre todo en los medios de comunicación como la radio, la televisión, los periódicos. Y por supuesto es una tarea también de los mismos hablantes y de las familias indígenas. También en esto UNICEF ha estado comprometida y ha apoyado varias experiencias de apoyo a comunicadores indígenas y a radios indígenas y a medios de comunicaciones indígenas. También ha promovido la formulación de materiales en lenguas indígenas y respetuosos de la visión indígena. De cara a promover la difusión de la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas, conjuntamente en algunos casos con otros organismos, por ejemplo el Fondo Indígena o en otro caso con la OIT, hemos apoyado la traducción de la declaración en unas 15 lenguas indígenas de América Latina y todavía no la hemos puesto en la website, en el sitio web, pero la vamos a mandar. Ahora se trata de hacer los talleres para su difusión. Con el apoyo del Gobierno de España estamos elaborando un atlas sociolingüístico y etnolingüístico como instrumento que pueda ayudar a los planificadores y a los que toman decisiones en materia de política pública para que conozcan un poco más el aspecto lingüístico de los países donde se trabaja. Algunas lecciones aprendidas. Los programas que han dado mayores y mejores resultados en materia de uso de lenguas indígenas son aquellos que han contado con la participación activa de los pueblos indígenas mismos. Tal como se ha dicho, UNICEF promueve la participación de los titulares de derechos y especialmente de los niños y adolescentes. Hemos aprendido que el trabajo en y sobre lenguas indígenas es una estrategia importantísima para el empoderamiento de los pueblos indígenas, especialmente de las mujeres. También hemos aprendido que la educación bilingüe en muchos casos ha logrado reducir las brechas educativas entre niños y niñas y que estas últimas, las niñas, son las que más se benefician de estos programas. Igualmente pasa con los programas de alfabetización en lengua materna para las poblaciones adultas indígenas. Nuestras experiencias también nos demuestran la importancia de contar con políticas lingüísticas en el marco de las políticas públicas de cada país con participación indígena. Son pocos los países que cuentan con una clara política lingüística. También necesitamos trabajar para el mantenimiento y desarrollo de las lenguas indígenas y para su uso en varios ámbitos de la sociedad. La participación indígena, y con este concluyo, no se debe dar solo en las decisiones relativas al estatus de la lengua y, por lo tanto, a su prestigio y a su uso en la sociedad, sino también se debe dar la participación, se debe promover la participación en las decisiones relativas al corpus lingüístico, a las cuestiones relativas al alfabeto, a las cuestiones relativas a las normas ortográficas, a las elaboraciones del lenguaje técnico en los varios ámbitos y sectores. Esto es para nosotros lo que es la aplicación del artículo 30 de la Convención sobre los Derechos del Niño y, por supuesto, lo que es la declaración, aun cuando la declaración va mucho más allá y la declaración en muchos aspectos habla también de lo que es el trabajo que hay que hacer con el resto de la población, no solo con los indígenas. De ahí que el compromiso de UNICEF en los varios países donde trabajamos es promover una educación intercultural para todos los niños y niñas y adolescentes, que no esté solo limitada a los niños indígenas, porque si queremos construir sociedades más justas y más democráticas, necesitamos más diálogo y más comprensión y más enriquecimiento mutuo entre los varios sectores que componen la sociedad de los países. Muchas gracias.
Thank you, Mrs. D'Amelio, for your valuable contribution, and our thanks to UNICEF for their commitment to indigenous languages. Everyone, would you join me in thanking our experts, our panelists, for their excellent contribution to today's half-day discussion on indigenous languages. Thank you very much. I will now go to the list of speakers, and we will begin with the Government of Canada. We have two speakers, Ms. Patricia Neary, who is the Director General of Aboriginal Affairs Branch of Heritage Canada, and we also have a wonderful contribution to us today, the Assistant Deputy Minister of the Government of Nunavut, Madame Arnagog, and I apologize if I did not say your name correctly. So to our distinguished speakers, you have the floor.
Madame Chairperson and members of the Permanent Forum, Canada is pleased to be here today to participate in this important meeting. Canada acknowledges 2008 as the International Year of Languages and applauds the work that the Permanent Forum is undertaking to support the protection and promotion of the world's Indigenous languages. sur la population totale du Canada, qui totalise un peu plus de 33 millions de personnes. Plus d'un million de Canadiens, soit quelque 4% de notre population, se reconnaissent comme étant membres d'une Première Nation, Inuit ou Métis. Le Canada regroupe environ 50 langues autochtones différentes, ce qui est le reflet d'une grande diversité de cultures et d'identités autochtones. Ces langues incluent les langues appartenant aux familles de langues de Première Nation, le Mi'kmaq, une langue développée par les Métis, et l'Inuktitut. Bien qu'une cinquantaine de langues autochtones sont parlées au Canada, certains indices donnent à penser que cette diversité est menacée. En 2006, seulement une personne autochtone sur cinq avait une langue maternelle autochtone et un nombre encore plus faible parlait une langue autochtone à la maison. Cependant, une proportion plus élevée, environ 22 % des Autochtones, ont indiqué qu'ils étaient capables de parler une langue autochtone, puisque plusieurs l'avaient appris comme langue seconde. A 2007 Statistics Canada publication noted the importance of second language acquisition among speakers of endangered languages. This, in some measure, is serving as a counterbalance to the decline in Aboriginal mother tongue. It is especially true among youth who are showing interest in learning the traditional but endangered languages of their parents or grandparents as second languages. The growing trend among Aboriginal youth to learn their endangered languages as second languages attests to the significant role youth are playing in keeping their languages and cultures alive for future generations. As noted in the Government of Canada's 2008 publication entitled Hope or Heartbreak, Aboriginal Youth and Canada's Future, and I quote, Aboriginal youth are asserting themselves as future stewards of their communities and their cultures in the 21st century. These are all important developments and should be celebrated, end quote. Le gouvernement du Canada a pris un certain nombre de mesures importantes visant à protéger les langues menacées au Canada. L'initiative des langues autochtones sert à appuyer des projets communautaires de préservation et de promotion des langues des Premières Nations, des Inuits et des Métis. Le Canada verse des sommes additionnelles à ces trois territoires nordiques afin de favoriser la préservation et la promotion des langues autochtones dans le nord du Canada. De plus, le Canada appuie des sociétés de communication autochtones pour qu'elles diffusent des émissions de télévision et de radio dans des langues autochtones. D'autres fonds sont attribués pour contribuer à la diffusion d'émissions de télévision dans les langues autochtones. In conclusion, the Government of Canada is committed to supporting endangered languages through data collection and analysis, the development of indicators, and through sustainable investments in community-based initiatives. I would now turn to my colleague from Nunavut.
I'm very pleased to be here today, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. I'm pleased to share with you our accomplishments regarding our Inuit language efforts in Nunavut. The International Year of Languages is most relevant to Nunavut.
Excuse me, Madam. I beg your pardon, Madam. I just wanted to make an announcement to the floor that there apparently is no Russian translation at the moment.
Yeah.
But now it has begun. So you've been advised there is now Russian translation. Pardon me for interrupting you, Madam. Please go on.
Thank you. The International Year of Languages is most relevant to Nunavut as we in our territory as a government are close to realizing the dream of the people in Nunavut, of the people of Nunavut, which is not to not only protect but entrench through legislative instruments our Inuit language. The government of Nunavut came into being on April the 1st, 1999 as the newest territory in Canada, born from the Nunavut Land Claims Agreement, which is the largest land claim settlement ever reached between a state and its Aboriginal people anywhere in the world. The government of Nunavut is a new government inherited legislation from the government of the Northwest Territories legislation, such as the Official Languages Act, which was not designed for the unique Nunavut needs of Nunavummiut, or people of Nunavut. Therefore, one of the mandates of the government was to design new legislation that recognizes our Inuit language. Our new legislation, Bill 6, the Official Languages Act, and Bill 7, the Inuit Languages Protection Act, are the result of one of the most extensive consultation processes undertaken since the creation of our territory. The two bills are now before the Legislative Assembly in Nunavut. They are key elements in the plan to preserve, protect, and enhance the use of the Inuit language. When the Official Languages Act is brought into force, it will establish the Inuit language along with English and French as official languages of Nunavut. For the first time, Inuit in Nunavut will have a legal statement of their inherent right to use the Inuit language in full equality with other official languages, which is consistent with international instruments, including the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the Convention on the Protection and Promotion of the Diversity of Cultural Expressions proclaimed by the United Nations. This exceeds any other legal protection in place for any other Aboriginal group in Canada. I will not get into details because you'll be able to see the copy, but in closing, the government of Nunavut and indeed Nunavummiut, or people of Nunavut, are proud of the work done to date in our territory in our efforts to not only protect but to promote our Inuit language, and to this end, we are willing participants on the world stage to show and share with Indigenous peoples what we have learned in our journey to achieve a unique foothold in the area of Indigenous language protection. Thank you.
I would like to thank the distinguished representatives from the Government of Canada for their most valuable contribution, and to also share with our Nunavut sister that we are delighted to have her amongst us today. I would like to next call on the Grand Chief Ed John, who will be making a global statement for all of the Indigenous caucuses represented here today. So, Grand Chief, please, you have the floor.
Madam Chair, there are two statements, one on the health, and I'm assuming that the global statement you are referring to.
Grand Chief, yes, I'm referring to the joint statement that you will be making.
Okay.
For several Indigenous caucuses.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair. I appreciate this. I was just a bit confused as we are dealing with Indigenous languages. I would like to, it's a bit of a deviation from the agenda, but this statement is presented on behalf of the North American Indigenous Peoples Caucus, the African Indigenous Peoples Caucus, the Asian Indigenous Peoples Caucus, the Pacific Indigenous Peoples Caucus, the South American Indigenous Peoples Caucus, and the Arctic Indigenous Caucus. I'd like to also thank Mr. Espinal from the World Health Organization this morning on his report and explanation on the TB pandemic. As was explained, the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues recognizes that each year there are 9.2 million cases of TB, resulting in 1.7 million deaths. TB affects disproportionately the socioeconomic dispossessed, and in many cases those are Indigenous peoples, our peoples. Tuberculosis, although 90% preventable and curable, is exacerbated by TB, HIV, co-infection, and emergent forms of drug-resistant diseases. The 370 million Indigenous peoples span in 80 countries live among the poorest and most marginalized communities in the world, placing them at a greater risk of suffering from TB. Where good data is available, tuberculosis are 20 to 30 times higher for indigenous peoples than expected. However, indigenous identifiers are not available for tuberculosis data of Africa, Asia, and Latin America. In collaboration with Stop TB Partnership, we demand an urgent and strong response against tuberculosis in these indigenous communities. I'd like to, from the site event that was held yesterday, hosted by the Assembly of First Nations, this document became quickly a document supported by the Indigenous Caucus globally. There are a number of recommendations I would like to bring forward. Firstly, we recommend that the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issue consider this TB pandemic as urgent. We further recommend that the Permanent Forum and its members support the empowerment initiatives in Indigenous communities in addressing tuberculosis. And as we know, that the initiative should take place in the communities, by the communities, in order for it to have the greatest impact. As well, the Permanent Forum and its members to support the development and implementation of global Indigenous Stop TB initiative, work with the Stop TB partnership to enhance the fight against tuberculosis and its associated risk factors, provide political encouragement to this initiative, advise and facilitate links to the global Indigenous communities, demand resource mobilization efforts to strengthen TB responses among Indigenous communities, and assist in implementation of Article 24.2 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, which recognizes that Indigenous individuals have an equal right to the enjoyment of the highest attainable standard of physical and mental health. States are to take the necessary steps with a view to achieving progressively the full realization of this right. Finally, final recommendation, it is recommended that Stop TB Initiative Partnership report annually to the United Nations Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues. And we heard this morning the World Health Organization representative and the comments regarding this ongoing and increasing pandemic that faces an ever-increasing numbers of Indigenous peoples worldwide. With that, Madam Chair, that is the statement from the Global Caucus.
Thank you very much, Grand Chief Ed John, for that most valuable contribution. And the permanent forum members will be taking your suggestions very seriously. So thank you, Chief. I would like to give the floor to one of the distinguished members of the Permanent Forum, Mr. Bartolome Clavero. He has asked to speak. Distinguished colleague, you have the floor.
Gracias, señora presidenta. Permítanme hacer un breve comentario sobre las presentaciones que hemos tenido esta tarde, que cubren un abanico, un espacio entre alguna bastante pesimista y alguna muy optimista. Y creo que es un dato que puede preocupar que la presentación más optimista viene de Agencia Internacional y la presentación más pesimista viene de parte indígena. Si la experiencia indígena no es tan optimista como la experiencia de los agentes internacionales, puede que tengamos un problema. Cuando hablo de presentación pesimista, me estoy en particular refiriendo, espero no equivocarme, a la que nos ha presentado nuestro distinguido colega en el foro, Lars Anders Baer, de la cual quiero sobre todo comentar un punto. Recupera la calificación como genocidio de determinadas políticas que no son políticas que produzcan muertes. A menudo olvidamos que la Convención para la Prevención y la Sanción del Delito de Genocidio no solo describe como genocidio la destrucción física de grupos, sino también políticas que hacen desaparecer los grupos sin producir ningún tipo de muerte. con referencia a políticas lingüísticas que perjudiquen el mantenimiento de lenguas indígenas, hay en particular dos descripciones, dos tipificaciones del delito de genocidio que pueden efectivamente, como nos dice Lars Anders, efectivamente constituir genocidio o suponer que se comete genocidio cuando se emprenden políticas perjudiciales para lenguas indígenas. Una de estas descripciones es cuando la Convención sobre el Genocidio se refiere como genocidio a la lesión grave a la identidad mental de los miembros del grupo. Evidentemente, como Lars Anders nos ha explicado, puede ser un efecto de políticas lingüísticas contrarias a lenguas indígenas. Y, por otra parte, también el traslado por fuerza de niños de un grupo a otro grupo. Claro, el traslado no tiene por qué ser físico. Las políticas lingüísticas que no favorecen el mantenimiento de lenguas indígenas en la infancia indígena producen una transferencia cultural de un grupo a otro que incluso puede implicar, pues, ese efecto que se ha venido a llamar de generación robada. Las generaciones robadas, las políticas de generaciones robadas, incluso sin transferencia forzosa física de niños, son políticas genocidas según la Convención sobre el Genocidio. Sería importante subrayar esto, que deduzco de la presentación y del documento que ha presentado Lars Anders Baer, en razón de que el reconocimiento político de las lamentaciones por las políticas de generación robada debían inmediatamente llevar al reconocimiento de que se ha cometido genocidio y, por lo tanto, al derecho a la reparación de las víctimas de estos genocidios. Según la Convención sobre el Genocidio, repito, tan genocidas son las políticas lesivas para las lenguas indígenas, pueden serlo, como la matanza de indígenas. Y ya concluyendo, en la parte que digo pesimista, pero que seguramente es la parte realista de las presentaciones que hoy hemos tenido, se nos ha dicho también, lo ha dicho Lars Anders Baer, que la educación bilingüe puede ser genocida. Yo creo que este punto es muy importante. Efectivamente, también por verificación sociológica, las políticas bilingües, tal y como suelen ponerlas en práctica los Estados y las agencias internacionales, suelen producir efectos genocidas, estrictamente hablando, desde el punto de vista de la Convención del Genocidio. Nada más. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much to our distinguished colleague, Mr. Bartolomé Clamero. And I hope all the participants are taking note of your extremely valuable contribution. The next speaker on our list is from the Distinguished Government of New Zealand. I call on Ms. Lucy Dimwana from the Ministry of Maori Development for Aotearoa. Madam, you have the floor.
Whakataka te hau ki te uru, whakataka te hau ki te tonga. Kia mā kina kina ki uta, kia mā taratara ki tai. Kia hi ake ana te ātākura, he cheo, he huka, he hauhu, tihei mauriora. Ko papatuanuku e takoto nei, ko rangi nui e tū nei, tēnā kōrua. Ki ngā mana whenua o Iarohe, o Iarohe, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Madam Chair, I greet you in Māori, the indigenous language of Aotearoa, New Zealand. During the first decades of the 20th century, the vast majority of Māori people lived in homogeneous rural communities. The Māori language was the principal language of these communities, and it was the language used almost exclusively by the Māori people. Following the Second World War, there was a huge-scale movement of Māori into urban communities
where English was the predominant language of daily life. English was also the sole language of instruction in the primary and secondary schools that Māori children attended. This resulted in Māori becoming bilingual in both languages. Many Māori parents began raising their children through English language. This break in intergenerational language transmission resulted in rapid language loss. By the 1970s, leading sociolinguists were predicting the demise of the Māori language within one generation. These predictions spurred the Māori community into action with support from New Zealand government. In the 1970s and 1980s, there were significant developments in Māori language education and broadcasting, including the inclusion of the Māori language as a core curriculum subject in all New Zealand schools. Madam Chair, today marks the 10th anniversary of the passing of my father, who was on the advisory board that initiated and implemented that development. Other developments include immersion primary and secondary schools together with three tribal universities. Various tribal radio stations were also established to promote Māori culture and Māori language. The Māori Language Act was passed in 1987, which established a Māori Language Commission and declared Māori as an official language of New Zealand, Aotearoa. Madam Chair, in 1998, the New Zealand government greatly increased its practical support for the revitalisation of Te Reo Māori, the Māori language, and this was reflected in the release of a Māori language strategy. This strategy has a strong focus on strengthening intergenerational language transmission. I would now like to highlight some of the key achievements arising from that strategy. The establishment of the Community-Based Language Initiatives Program. This program supports and funds tribal language plans and the establishment of whānau language development programs, where trained mentors work on a one-to-one basis with participating whānau families to support intergenerational language transmission. The establishment of a Māori television service in 2004, which broadcasts 50 to 60% in Te Reo Māori. And it launched a second channel that broadcasts 100% in the Māori language when it hosted the World Indigenous Television Broadcasters Conference in March this year. The redevelopment of a Māori language curriculum. A significant increase in government funding for tribal radio stations over the last 3 years, following on from a large capital injection together with an annual training fund. The production and publication of key citizenship documents, including birth, death, and marriage certificates, passports, and census forms, and the recognition of the Māori language in our parliamentary processes and practices and the judiciary system. Madam Chair, the New Zealand government continues to monitor the health of the Māori language with large-scale sociolinguistic surveys having been undertaken in 2001 and 2006. These surveys show significant gains in the health of the Māori language. By 2006, the percentage of Māori people with some level of speaking proficiency had increased from 42% in 2001 to 51%. 15% of those surveyed in 2001 indicated that they spoke Māori to their children in primary school on a regular basis. By 2006, this figure had increased to 26%. A further 48% made some use of the Māori language in their interactions with their infants. This is a critical development as it indicates potential for intergenerational transmission, an important component for language revitalisation to occur. Attitudes towards Māori language among Māori and non-Māori living in New Zealand, Aotearoa, have become more positive. Of those surveyed, some 94% of Māori and 80% of non-Māori agreed that Māori people speaking Māori in public places or at work was a good thing. The findings of this research show progress towards the goals of the Māori language strategy and inform future government investment. Madam Chair, the language strategy will be reviewed in 2008 after 5 years of implementation. The review will assess the effectiveness of the government's implementation of that strategy and make recommendation how the government can continue to strengthen its implementation and form the basis for which the next iteration of that strategy will take place. We hope that this update on New Zealand's progress and experience in the revitalisation of the Māori language will add value to your consideration of this important issue for Indigenous peoples. And now the New Zealand delegation, Madam Chair, if you do not mind, would like to close with a waiata, which is a traditional practice in our country after a formal presentation has been made. Tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa.
E hara I te mea no nai nei, I te aro.
Kia ora koutou.
I would like to thank most warmly the distinguished delegation from Aotearoa for their most valuable contribution. Thank you so much. I would like to next give the floor to the distinguished representative from Peru, and Madame Maria Sermaya, the Indigenous parliamentarian from her country, will be speaking. Madame, you have the floor.
Sumar sukai kachun ñañai torai. Como parlamentaria de la Nación Quechua del Perú, miembro del Parlamento Indígena de las Américas, en esta declaración digo lo siguiente: el año 2008 ha sido proclamado Año Internacional de los Idiomas por la Asamblea General de las Naciones Unidas. Es evidente que con ello el organismo mundial intenta orientar las actividades de los estados y poblaciones involucradas a la promoción y protección de los derechos lingüísticos de nuestros pueblos indígenas y de todos aquellos derechos vinculados a que profundizan la democracia y la comprensión internacional. Esos derechos deberían formar parte integrante de las políticas de desarrollo de diversos sectores como la educación, la cual plantea la urgente necesidad de salvaguardar las lenguas, porque tanto la existencia de nuestros pueblos indígenas y como las nuestras lenguas se encuentran amenazados. Preservar los idiomas indígenas es fundamental para asegurar la protección de la identidad y la dignidad de los pueblos indígenas y para salvaguardar nuestro patrimonio tradicional. Cuando una niña o niño va a la escuela, se le impone una educación ajena a nuestra cultura indígena, enseñándoles en un idioma que no es nuestro idioma materno, existiendo así una situación de discriminación y exclusión en América Latina, el mundo que tiene que cambiar. Los estados, incluyendo aquellos que conocen formalmente las lenguas originarias, en la práctica fuerzan el abandono de dichas lenguas con una política que excluye y pone en la condición de ciudadano de segunda clase a quienes no comunicamos en idiomas indígenas. Se trata de resolver las relaciones básicas que cualquier ciudadano está obligado a tener con el Estado, resolverlas de manera democrática, intercultural, con leyes y prácticas orientadas al reconocimiento del derecho más elemental de nuestros pueblos originarios a hablar nuestra lengua materna. Por otro lado, los derechos lingüísticos deben entenderse como derechos colectivos, individuales que pertenecen a nuestros pueblos indígenas, a los hablantes que somos nosotros mismos y son parte de los derechos humanos reconocidos universalmente. Las diversidades biológica, lingüística y cultural son inseparables y se refuerzan recíprocamente, de modo que cuando se pierde un idioma indígena, también se pierden los conocimientos tradicionales sobre cómo conservar la diversidad biológica del mundo, y por lo tanto se pierde la oportunidad de aprovechar conocimientos ancestrales para hacer frente al cambio climático y otros problemas ambientales. Considerando que existimos millones de indígenas discriminados en razón de hablar nuestra lengua e idioma, se trata de devolvernos a millones de indígenas nuestra dignidad, nuestra personalidad, nuestro derecho de ciudadanía, los derechos humanos más fundamentales y la oportunidad de participar en el desarrollo de nuestros pueblos y de la gran nación indígena. Recomendamos, pues, que el 7º Foro Permanente de las Naciones Unidas de Cuestiones Indígenas reconozca el derecho a toda persona que habla una lengua originaria a relacionarse y a ser atendida en su lengua por los organismos estatales, oficializando estas lenguas en donde tengan predominancia. El Estado debe proporcionarles a los pueblos indígenas una educación bilingüe y multicultural con un desarrollo planificado de las lenguas. Promover que los pueblos indígenas tengan una real participación en la elaboración de las políticas educativas para ejercer influencia sobre los servicios que reciben. Es muy importante mejorar la responsabilidad y la rendición de cuentas de los funcionarios del Estado respecto de la prestación de servicios sociales, educacionales, de salud y otros a la población indígena, de modo que mejore la calidad y la cantidad de los servicios que prestan. Que el Estado aporte los fondos necesarios para llevar a la práctica las leyes y programas que permitan el uso, fomento y preservación de las lenguas indígenas. Que la comunidad internacional considere la distribución deliberada de las lenguas indígenas como una violación flagrante de los derechos humanos. Recomendamos también que depende directamente del foro es la exigencia de declarar un idioma indígena como idioma oficial del Foro Permanente sobre Asuntos Indígenas de la UNO. Estamos reunidos, pueblos indígenas diversos, y nos sentiríamos reivindicados si cualquier idioma nuestro es declarado oficial, porque somos de una cosmovisión solidaria en nuestra esperanza. Es nuestra esperanza que se tome en cuenta esta petición y se haga realidad en el 8º periodo de sesiones de este Foro Permanente. Uspalay. Quisiera también decir, como representante del Parlamento Indígena de Perú, he presentado el proyecto de ley sobre preservación y uso de las lenguas originarias y necesito vuestra solidaridad, porque a veces, muchas veces en el Congreso de nuestro país somos discriminados y no escuchados. Por eso necesito, hermanos, vuestra solidaridad. Muchas gracias. Uspalay.
I would like to thank the distinguished representative from Peru for her succinct message to us today and for keeping her comments within a very short time limit. I must ask all of the speakers to keep that in mind. We only have another hour to go, and we have several speakers on the list. So I beg of you to keep your remarks as brief as possible. The members of the permanent forum will be reviewing your reports, absolutely. I would like to call on the distinguished government of Finland, the president of the Sami Parliament of Finland. I beg your pardon for not being able to pronounce your surname, so please forgive me. But, sir, you have the floor.
Madam Chair, honorable members of the Permanent Forum and participants of the session, I am a Sami politician. For me, the situation of indigenous languages is one of the most important questions in the international cooperation related to indigenous issues. I have, however, noted that languages have not always been at the heart of the cooperation in this context. Land rights, climate change, and political issues are perhaps areas where we can find solidarity and common objectivity relatively easily. The situation of languages may have appeared to be an issue that separates indigenous peoples rather than unites us. I believe that our concern for language unites us and that we all share the common objective to preserve, develop, and pass on our languages from generation to generation. Indigenous languages have developed during centuries together with indigenous cultures. Languages are not only a means for communications, but also a medium and important part of culture. Language tells us through terminology about the environment, livelihoods, and cultural habits of local culture. All indigenous languages are unique and adapted to the local environment. This is what unites all indigenous peoples. Our languages are specialized part of our cultures and windows to our relationship with nature. Scientific assessments made regarding the future of indigenous and minority languages are not optimistic. Many languages will die in the near future. Some say that even 25% of the 6,000 indigenous languages are endangered. At the international level, there is no time to waste. We cannot just watch a part of our identity die, leaving only a hollow state of the original culture to the future generations. Without indigenous languages, the future of entire indigenous culture is seriously endangered. The death of language means that the unique knowledge stored in that language disappears and the capacity of the culture to function and adapt to global social and environmental change is substantially weakened. It is of the critical importance to preserve indigenous languages. It is the best way to assure the future of indigenous cultures. Language has a cultural context. It is influenced by the environment, cultural habits, livelihoods, contacts, and beliefs. Scientists and politicians have developed the concept of traditional ecological knowledge, which refers to the ecological knowledge that has been accumulated by the local community over centuries. The main purpose of this concept is to describe the environmental knowledge stored in language through taxonomies. These word lists and grammars are informative, but they tell only a little about the way terminology is used and talked, or about the environmental relationship between words. As I suggested above, language cannot be treated merely as a means of communication. It should also be considered as an inseparable part of culture and its development. In linguistic research, it is commonly held that language influences culture and vice versa. Researchers speak about Sapir-Whorf hypothesis or about linguistic relativity. Language influences the ways in which we think, and it is the tool for thinking. Consequently, when considering cultures, we should always bear in mind that language are the most important issue when preserving indigenous cultures. I'm a member of a Sami reindeer herding family, and I have done research on the reindeer herding, Sami culture, and language. Samis are experts in reading nature and have very special and distinct terminology for environmental conditions and phenomena. The Sami language has a vast storage of terminology and appellatives for snow, which creates certainty when navigating and moving in the landscape. Although linguistic knowledge is typically largely of a practical nature, it also holds more theoretical aspect in perceptive models, cultural ways of seeing, and in the exact classification systems of natural phenomena, landforms, terminology, and identification models. In our work here at the Permanent Forum and in other fora, we need to focus on the relationship between culture and language. Indigenous languages cannot be treated simply as minority languages because they are key elements of indigenous cultures. United Nations Declaration on the Rights of the Indigenous Peoples states, inter alia, that indigenous peoples have the right to develop their languages. Also, other international instruments and knowledge the importance of preserving and developing indigenous and minority languages. We need resources and specific policies to preserve indigenous languages. Perhaps there would be a need for United Nations Declaration on Indigenous Languages. This year has been proclaimed by the United Nations General Assembly as the International Year of Languages. We need to devote more attention, work, resources, and political commitment to preserving indigenous languages. There are 9 Sami languages, all endangered. Just a few years ago, we lost the 10th Sami language when the last speaker of Ahkil Sami died in Russia. During the last years of her life, she only spoke her mother tongue to her cow. 3 of the Sami languages are spoken in Finland. Out of these, North Sami is spoken in Norway, Sweden, and Finland, and it's the largest Sami language. Anar Sami is spoken only in Finland, and Skolt Sami is spoken mainly in Finland, but also in Russia. In Finland, the right to use the Sami languages is granted by the Constitution and the Sami Language Act. The Sami Language Act states the Samis have the right to use Sami languages before public authorities in the Sami home area. In terms of legislation, the situation of Sami languages is good in Finland. The implementation of the legislation has been hampered by the lack of resources, however. Among the Sami languages spoken in Finland, the situation of Skolt Sami is particularly serious. Only about half of the 600 Skolt Sami living in Finland speaks Skolt Sami as their mother tongue, and none of them are children. This is a serious threat to the future of the Skolt Sami language and culture. Special measures, adequate resources, and political commitment are needed to preserve the Skolt Sami language. In Finland, we also have positive examples, such as the revitalization of the Anar Sami language. The immersion courses, so-called language showers, have worked very well in the revitalization of Anar Sami and helped to secure the future of this language, at least for the time being. Indigenous organizations have worked actively on preserving the Sami language spoken in Finland. We also have a fairly good situation when it comes to the availability of official documents and other material provided for the general public in Sami languages. However, fully realizing the right to use Sami before public authorities, which is the guaranteed in Sami Language Act, requires further work. My mother tongue is North Sami. I'm a child of the times when it was not normal anymore to pass on the Sami language to the children. In my childhood village, many Samis started to speak Finnish even to their own children as a result of assimilation policies of the church and society at large. Local Finns often held negative attitudes towards the Sami language.
Mr. President,
that it would be better for the children if they spoke Finnish rather than Sami.
Mr. President,
the knowledge of Finnish would give their children better opportunities in life, and they would.
Mr. President of the Sami Council, could I please beg you to begin your final remarks?
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Perhaps. Madam Chair, dear participant, the best advice I can give you to preserve and save your languages is that you need to use them. Speak in your mother tongue to your children, to your friends, and at public events. We cannot save a language only by statesmen and legislation. The language needs to be used and talked. Political commitment, policies, and resources are needed for support. We need all the speakers of indigenous languages to work as best finders, provide an example, and encourage people to their mother tongue. Thank you for the interest.
I would like to thank His Excellency, the President of the Sami Parliament of Finland, for his excellent contribution. Thank you very much, Mr. President. I would now like to go to the Distinguished Government of Denmark, and I give the floor to Ms. Julian Henningsen, member of the Danish Parliament of Greenland. Madam, you have the floor.
Thank you. Madam Chairperson, distinguished members of the Parliament Permanent Forum, ladies and gentlemen. The Greenland Home Rule Government is responsible for language development and preservation in Greenland. I therefore take the floor to speak on behalf of Greenland as a member of the Danish Parliament for Greenland. We welcome the initiative by the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues to present an overview of the issues on Indigenous languages by the expert group. The group underlined the importance of the interconnection between language rights and all other fundamental rights, the importance of linguistic diversity. We share the concern of the expert group for the lack of urgency for policy measures to reverse the threat for extinction of some indigenous languages, and that there is need for revitalization, promotion, and protection of indigenous languages. At this time, there is also a need to highlight some best practices on the work on indigenous languages. Language rights are also human rights, and these are also connected to the right to self-determination. Saying that also follows that indigenous peoples have an obligation to make efforts to stabilize and keep their languages alive. I would like to mention some examples from Greenland. We have developed a tradition of literacy in our own language during the period of 150 years. We have our tales and traditions in writing. In developing the literature, we also have developed awareness of other cultures and traditions to strengthen our identity as people. We have also developed a tradition to translate world literature into Greenlandic, the latest being Harry Potter. The Greenland Home Rule Government appoints language committees which are tasked with developing normative standardized usage of the language in script, while at the same time there are no limitations in using dialectal differentiations in the spoken language. The Greenland Language Secretariat follows the dynamics of the language and reviews the language policy adopted by the Parliament and the Government in 2001. The language committees and the Secretariat have working relationships with the Nordic Language Council and with Inuit bodies dealing with Inuit language in Canada, Alaska, and Chukotka. The Greenland Parliament is now in process of preparing legislation on language integration where Greenlandic Inuit language will be the main language, while Danish will continue to be taught in school and used in public affairs. It is also necessary that indigenous language make use of the new
technological advances for the development of their materials to support the languages. For us in Greenland, it is a strength that the language and now and the knowledge of the youth work together with the language and the knowledge of the elders.
Neheta chingut okakusup bunga. Nuan naku chingakput kerathisut inuit okachingut. Tessama tanunap inokkavisa okasisa idat. Naksuang pakatanong mi atawak tusset.
In conclusion, I would like to say we are so fortunate that our Greenlandic Inuit language is one of the indigenous languages to survive globalization. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Hennessen, member of the Danish Parliament for Greenland. We appreciate your concise remarks. The next speaker on our list is the Distinguished Government of Guatemala. And I'd like to call on Mr. Walter Reyes, the Director General of Cultural, Ministry, and Sports. Mr. Reyes, you have the floor, sir.
Señora Presidenta, kinyapan hung nimarajutsil wechla alak, pakibiri kachalar mayim, shinka, garifuna, yay mestizo. Reritinamit ishimuleu. Reciba un cordial saludo del pueblo maya, xinca, garífuna y mestizo voladino de Guatemala. El saludo fue en idioma achi. Siendo Guatemala un país que se reconoce como multicultural, pluriétnico y plurilingüe, no podemos dejar pasar este tema sin compartir con los miembros de este foro, los estados miembros y los distinguidos participantes de las organizaciones indígenas lo siguiente. Primero, agradecer al Foro Permanente por la organización de la reunión del Grupo Internacional de Expertos sobre Lenguas Indígenas, organizado en enero de este año, y por la presentación del informe sobre esta reunión. En lo concerniente a lenguas indígenas, en Guatemala está en vigencia la Ley de Idiomas Nacionales, en la que se regula el uso de los idiomas mayas en la administración pública y en otras esferas de la vida. En Guatemala existen 22 idiomas de origen maya, siendo estas achí, acateco, aguacateco, chalchiteco, chortí, chuj, itzá, ixil, cachiquel, quiche, mam, mopán, pocomam, yachí, anjobal, zacapulteco, zipacapense, tectiteco, chutujil y uspanteco, más el garífuna, xinca y castellano. En lo que concerniente a idiomas mayas, el Estado de Guatemala cuenta con la Academia de Lenguas Mayas de Guatemala, una institución autónoma, cuyo fin primordial es la promoción y preservación de los idiomas mayas. Probablemente no tenga la aceptación necesaria por todos los habitantes de Guatemala, sin embargo, es un avance en materia de promoción y desarrollo de los idiomas indígenas de Guatemala. Asimismo, es de importancia resaltar que el racismo y la discriminación ha sido un obstáculo considerable para poder implementar los idiomas en la administración pública. En la actualidad está en revisión el reglamento de la ley en la que se va a regular el uso de los idiomas en los diferentes ámbitos de la administración pública, tales como educación, justicia, salud, entre otros ámbitos. El Estado, a través de la Academia de Lenguas Mayas, tiene previsto el lanzamiento de un canal televisivo intercultural en la que se pretende promover y difundir los idiomas y la cosmovisión de cada uno de los pueblos que cohabitamos Guatemala, con el fin de que nos conozcamos y nos respetemos como tales, y busquemos el desarrollo integral de los pueblos para dar cumplimiento al principio de la unidad en la diversidad. El Ministerio de Cultura y Deportes, con el fin de dar cumplimiento a algunas de las disposiciones de la ley, está implementando las unidades de desarrollo cultural, respetando la territorialidad de los pueblos indígenas. De esa cuenta se revitaliza la diversidad cultural y lingüística de Guatemala, ya que el idioma es uno de los pilares sobre los cuales se sostiene la cultura y se transmite la cosmovisión de los pueblos de generación en generación. Guatemala es un país eminentemente cultural, por lo tanto, el desarrollo de Guatemala no está basado en la agricultura, sino en su diversidad cultural y lingüística. En el actual gobierno, a través de la Dirección de Desarrollo Cultural y Fortalecimiento de las Culturas, se está fomentando la participación ciudadana a través de la capacitación y organización comunitaria para fomentar el desarrollo humano sostenible con pertinencia lingüística y cultural. Esta misma dirección está fomentando la promoción de las industrias culturales y creativas en virtud de que las comunidades indígenas tienen mayor potencial en la cultura. En las políticas públicas, culturales y deportivas se establece que el Estado de Guatemala está obligado a incorporar la dimensión cultural en sus políticas, planes y acciones tendientes a conseguir el mejoramiento y la sostenibilidad de la calidad de vida de los pueblos maya, garífuna, xinca y mestizo. Nuestro desafío es que las políticas culturales se conviertan en políticas de Estado. Haciendo un llamado a la comunidad internacional para asegurar una financiación suficiente para la preservación, promoción y revitalización de las lenguas de los pueblos indígenas, también alentamos a la UNESCO para que, en colaboración con los gobiernos y expertos indígenas, se trabaje en elaborar estrategias para el mantenimiento, la protección y la revitalización de las lenguas indígenas a través de una planificación lingüística integral. En el marco del Día Internacional de la Lengua Materna y del Año Internacional de las Lenguas Maternas, se realizó un foro en el que estuvo presente el presidente de la República de Guatemala, el ingeniero Álvaro Colom, en donde se resaltó la importancia de usar los idiomas maternos en Guatemala en sus diversos ámbitos, con el apoyo de GTZ y UNESCO de Guatemala. Guatemala es un país rico culturalmente. Esta riqueza se podrá expresar en bienestar para todos los habitantes. Lo anterior se logrará solamente cuando podamos comprender que somos países con culturas diferentes, es decir, multiculturales, que somos multilingües porque hablamos diferentes idiomas, tenemos diferentes formas de ver el mundo, la espiritualidad y la vida, ya que esto nos hace más sólidos. Tenemos que aprender a respetarnos y a convivir armoniosamente, a aprender de los otros, ser solidarios y estar convencidos que solamente trabajando juntos lograremos conformar el país que siempre soñamos y que heredaremos a nuestros descendientes. Todos los idiomas que se hablan en Guatemala y el mundo merecen el mismo respeto. Que los pueblos indígenas del mundo tengamos paz, mucha paz y seamos felices. Pachtana, Tantish, Maltiosh, gracias.
Thank you so much, Mr. Reyes, for your valuable contribution. I look forward to reading your remarks. Thank you. I would like to give the floor to the distinguished permanent forum representative, Elise Kanki. Ms. Kanki, if you could keep your remarks brief. Muchas gracias.
Gracias, señora presidenta. Yo no sé si todavía aún la gente de UNICEF está aquí y es porque es para ellos la recomendación. Solamente decir que si bien se ha ido trabajando mucho en el tema educación intercultural bilingüe, sin embargo creo que todavía tenemos que prestarle especial atención al lenguaje que las imágenes de los materiales de educación intercultural tienen en el marco de estos programas. Porque sabemos que muchas veces una imagen hace más que una palabra, una acción. Y eso puede cambiar y romper la cultura de los pueblos indígenas. Y solamente eso, o sea, prestarles suma atención el tipo de imágenes que estamos utilizando en los materiales educativos. Gracias.
Thank you to my distinguished colleague, Ms. Elisa Kanki. Ms. Kanki, thank you very much for your concise contribution. Do appreciate it. The next distinguished government on the list is Mexico. I would like to give the floor to Ms. Gabriela Estrada, the head of the Department of International. Madam, you have the floor.
Muchas gracias, señora presidenta. En México, se trabaja en los lineamientos que el grupo de expertos ha definido. Afortunadamente, desde 2003 se reconoció constitucionalmente el carácter pluricultural de la nación mexicana y la garantía de los miembros de pueblos y comunidades indígenas de preservar y enriquecer sus lenguas, conocimientos y todos los elementos que constituyen su cultura e identidad. México había avanzado también con las reformas a los códigos penal federal y de procedimientos penales y con la Ley General de Derechos Lingüísticos de los Pueblos Indígenas, la cual creó el Instituto Nacional de Lenguas Indígenas, conocido como INALI, e institutos estatales de lenguas indígenas. La suscripción por parte de México de los principales instrumentos internacionales sobre derechos humanos y pueblos indígenas, aunado a la voluntad del gobierno de avanzar en la implementación de las pautas que en materia de derechos lingüísticos establece la Declaración de las Naciones Unidas sobre los Derechos de los Pueblos Indígenas, aseguran el compromiso con los trabajos futuros. El INALI, a 3 años de trabajo como organismo experto en lenguas indígenas, ha atendido las diferentes problemáticas relativas al reconocimiento y vigencia de los derechos lingüísticos de los pueblos indígenas de México. Actualmente, enfrenta el reto de iniciar el proceso para establecer la normalización lingüística y la formulación de programas para certificar y acreditar a técnicos y profesionales bilingües necesarios para el pleno acceso a la justicia y demás servicios que brinda el Estado, en cumplimiento al derecho de pueblos y comunidades indígenas a mantener y utilizar sus lenguas en igualdad de condiciones que el español y con el mismo valor en los procedimientos judiciales y administrativos. Adicionalmente, el pasado 14 de enero se publicó en el Diario Oficial de la Federación el catálogo de las lenguas indígenas nacionales, lo que facilitará la atención gubernamental en lenguas indígenas considerando sus variantes lingüísticas. En el pasado mes de febrero se constituyó el Comité Consultivo para la Atención de las Lenguas Indígenas en Riesgo del INALI, integrado por personas hablantes de lenguas indígenas, académicos, investigadores y representantes de instituciones públicas. La Comisión Nacional para el Desarrollo de los Pueblos Indígenas, CDI, a través del Sistema Nacional de Radiodifusoras Culturales Indigenistas, transmite en 31 lenguas en las correspondientes regiones indígenas del país. Además, sus transmisiones pueden escucharse desde hace más de un mes por Internet a través de la página de la CDI. En estas radiodifusoras trabajan directores y locutores indígenas. Diferentes dependencias de gobierno están trabajando en la revisión de los procesos de educación indígena, así como en la elaboración de materiales educativos y didácticos para buscar un modelo más adecuado de educación indígena básica, media y superior. México cuenta ya con 9 universidades interculturales. Actualmente, el Gobierno de México se encuentra discutiendo las modificaciones a la metodología de los censos de población para adecuarlos a las necesidades de información sociolingüística necesarias para implementar políticas públicas multilingües e interculturales. Esto será aplicable para el levantamiento del Censo General de Población 2010. Finalmente, la Delegación de México considera muy positiva la propuesta del Grupo de Expertos sobre la Conferencia Mundial sobre Diversidad Lingüística y estará atento a participar en ella. Muchas gracias.
Merci, Madame Gabriela, du gouvernement du Mexique. À présent, j'accorde la parole à la Fédération de Russie qui va fournir des réponses à mes collègues de l'instance permanente qui ont posé des questions. Ils sont là? Ah, ok.
Благодарю, госпожа председатель. Мы также хотели бы поблагодарить уважаемого эксперта за проявленный интерес и вопрос в адрес правительства моей страны. Хотели бы еще раз отметить, что вопросы защиты прав и интересов коренных народов рассматриваются правительством Российской Федерации в числе приоритетных. В Российской Федерации к коренным многочисленным народам относятся 45 этносов, общей численностью около 280 тысяч человек. В составе этой группы народов выделяются 40 коренных малочисленных народов Севера, Сибири и Дальнего Востока Российской Федерации, общей численностью почти 250 тысяч человек. Коренные малочисленные народы компактно проживают более чем в 30 субъектах Российской Федерации. Уязвимость традиционного образа жизни каждого из этих малочисленных народов делают особенно актуальной планомерную деятельность на государственном уровне по сохранению их культуры и традиционного образа жизни. Что касается Декларации о правах коренных народов, хотели бы отметить, что Россия стояла у истоков разработки данного документа. Российские представители активно участвовали в работе над проектом декларации, чтобы данный документ был более сбалансированный, учитывал интересы как государств, так и коренных народов. Сформулированные в декларации положения осуществлялись в Российской Федерации задолго до ее принятия. Так, в России создана система специализированных правовых актов для защиты прав коренного населения. С момента принятия Конституции Российской Федерации 1993 года уязвимые этнические группы населения официально обозначились терминами «коренные малочисленные народы». Конституция Российской Федерации связала, в частности, регулирование и защиту прав коренных малочисленных народов с правами на землю и другие природные ресурсы, рассматриваемые как основа жизни и деятельности народов, проживающих на соответствующей территории, а также с правом на защиту их исконной среды обитания и традиционного образа жизни. Помимо Конституции, права коренных народов отражены во множестве нормативно-правовых документов, в частности, в федеральных законах о гарантиях прав коренных малочисленных народов Российской Федерации и других документах. Федеральный закон «Основы законодательства Российской Федерации о культуре» фиксирует право народов и иных этнических общностей на сохранение и развитие своей культурно-национальной самобытности, защиту, восстановление и сохранение исконно культурно-исторической среды обитания. Право сохранять и развивать родной язык, традиции и культуру коренных малочисленных народов России закреплено также в федеральных законах о языках народов Российской Федерации и о национально-культурной автономии. Национальная образовательная политика Российской Федерации направлена на создание оптимальных условий для этносоцикультурного развития граждан России, в том числе и ее коренных народов. Более подробную информацию правительство Российской Федерации представило, и эта информация была издана в качестве документов 7-й сессии постоянного форума. Благодарю, госпожа председатель.
Thank you very much. I'd like to call now on Beverly Jacobs, who is going to speak on behalf of the Global Indigenous Women's Caucus. You have the floor.
Ganoso Gwego, Gyaso Gwenkuse, Gayengehaga, Nyagwait Shouda, Haudenosaunee. Honorable Chairwoman, member of the United Nations Permanent Forum, my sisters and brothers here today, there is an alarming prediction that the world can expect to lose half of approximately 6,000 languages this century, and that within 200 years, only 200 languages will be spoken globally. Most of those languages are indigenous languages. Humanity has yet to begin to contemplate the global effects of the extinction of indigenous languages, particularly languages, cultures, and biodiversity. Language is our life. It is part of our culture. It is part of our identity. It is part of who we are as a people. This is why when we say that when a language dies, our culture also dies. And our knowledge dies. Many states then conclude that if there is no distinct culture, then we are extinct. We stand here today to remind everyone that we are still here. One of the profound causes of language loss is that the state used its laws and systems to ban the practice of ceremonial practices, our governments, and languages as a means to eradicate our indigenous cultures and peoples. Despite these efforts, indigenous practices and languages remain of paramount importance, and indigenous languages continue to be spoken. However, the reality is that throughout the world, indigenous peoples' languages are becoming extinct. As language diversity diminishes, so does the adaptational strength of humanity, because as languages die, so does the pool of knowledge that we can draw upon to solve world dilemmas, such as the crises of climate change. Our distinct languages communicate our worldviews, particularly our knowledge of our lands and biodiversity. Frameworks for language revitalization do exist. Master-apprentice programs have been developed that need to be supported and implemented. These programs are successful even when there are only 6 fluent speakers left. Contemporary and inexpensive technologies are easily available for recording, transmitting, and translating of languages, and it is imperative in the interests of dying languages and bodies of knowledge that these be made available to our peoples in the interests not only of the protection and promotion of these for our own peoples, but as an integral and precious conservative notions of global heritage. We as Indigenous women know that when a language dies, a culture dies, and within it, tremendous and incalculable body of Indigenous knowledge. In this age of information, it would be tragically ironic to permit that. The regaining of ancestral languages is a formidable task because we can no longer rely on the natural intergenerational transmission. The Permanent Forum has the opportunity to challenge states and Indigenous peoples alike to take concrete action to revitalize Indigenous languages. Yesterday, it was said on a number of occasions where climate change is concerned that we are close to a tipping point, one of no return. Climate change and the endangered state of Indigenous languages are indeed related. In our cyclical view on life, without land and water, there could not be language. The permanent forum can be instrumental in bringing this into the global consciousness, such that appropriate action may be taken to reverse the trend toward language extinction and have the prediction that 200 years from now, only 200 languages will be spoken, be an unfulfilled prediction. We endorse the findings and recommendations of the expert paper entitled Forms of Education of Indigenous Children as Crimes Against Humanity, and the recommendations contained in the Permanent Forum's backgrounder, Climate Change and Indigenous Peoples, Fact Sheet on Indigenous Languages. We also, the Global Indigenous Women's Caucus, recommend and urge the Permanent Forum to call on states to immediately support Indigenous Peoples' language revitalization efforts. This includes supporting the Master Apprentice Programs and Assessment of Language Status, and their creation of more links between formal schools and family so that there is a continuous use of language. We strongly recommend to UNESCO and WIPO and UNICEF, among other UN agencies and to states, to urgently make available to us the means to access such protection and technologies that will help us to recover where necessary and to preserve our languages, to develop them in accordance with our needs to communicate in the modern world and to share them with our own future generations and with others who would like to speak to us in our own languages. Also to ensure that the means and support take all the forms of policy provision, legal recognition, integration into normal use and education programs and systems, including the building of capacity for teaching these languages in our traditional way and correctly, with affection and respect. This includes initiatives by universities to promote language revitalization of our peoples. To also recognize and support the central role of mothers and elders in language recovery and revitalization, including offering adult immersion programs for those who have lost access to their traditional languages or excluded due to migration or forced relocation. We also urge UNICEF, UNESCO, and WIPO to pay careful attention to the use of traditional oral learning, recording, and transmission techniques and to integrate them in their recommendation and expert support to governments in country programs, enhancing their capacity with substantial support in accessing to modern technologies that enable their survival in the modern world. Proper linguistic mapping of Indigenous languages with respect to Indigenous peoples' needs, urgently needs to be systematically done to enable our languages to be supported and thus no threat of extinction. To also recognize Articles 11, 13, 14, 15, and 16 of the UN Declaration that promote our rights to Indigenous languages, cultural traditions and customs, educational systems, and media in our own languages. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to present the Global Indigenous Women's Caucus. Niawe.
Thank you very much, Beverly Jacobs from the Global Indigenous Women's Caucus. I now would like to call on Anjali Daimari, who will speak on behalf of the Asia Caucus. And after her, I'll call Olav Matis Ira, who will speak on behalf of the Arctic Caucus. Anjali Daimari, you have the floor.
Madam Chairperson, distinguished delegates, ladies and gentlemen, it is a great pleasure for me to have this privilege to address the seventh session of the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, representing the Asia Indigenous Peoples Caucus. The Asia region is the home of millions of indigenous peoples and have the most diverse languages in the world. However, indigenous languages remain not officially recognized in many Asian countries, in spite of its continuing use by indigenous communities across the region. National languages are being imposed to indigenous peoples as opposed to developing their own language. In certain areas, indigenous children are not even allowed to speak their own language to interact with each other while in school premises. Because of these and other factors, there is an increasing threat of extinction of several indigenous languages across Asia. In the case of Northeast India, indigenous peoples are not given the freedom to choose the script to use in recognition of their mother tongue. In 1974, the Boro people had to struggle to demand the use of the Roman script, where 15 people were killed by the state security personnel. But in spite of this, still, the very script was not given. On the other hand, in 2003, when the Boro language was included in the 8th schedule of the Indian Constitution, particular script was mentioned as condition, which was never done before to the use of other languages. In Japan, the Ainu community could not keep their mother tongue because of the government's assimilation policy. Thus, many Ainu can only speak the national language, Japanese. In this context, their identity as Ainu is being eroded, and their knowledge and appreciation of their history and culture is also undermined by the almost total loss of the Ainu language. The same cases also happen to Burma and with other indigenous groups of Asia. Madam Chairperson, the Asia Indigenous Peoples Caucus welcomes and fully endorses the recommendations made in the International Experts Group meeting on Indigenous Languages, January 2008. In addition to this, we also recommend the following. States should immediately provide for the mechanism needed to implement the article in the UN Declaration of Indigenous Peoples' Rights pertaining to indigenous languages and indigenous education, that is Article 13.1 and Article 14.1, related to content and teaching methodology. For states to ensure the effective representation of indigenous peoples in decision-making bodies, in relation to policies and programs on languages at the national level, also and local levels. For states to stop any practices in prohibiting and restricting the use and development of indigenous languages while imposing other languages should be stopped. For UN agencies to provide direct support to community initiatives in developing their own indigenous languages as part of their distinct identity. For state and UN agencies such as UNESCO to put up a program for the revitalization on endangered IP languages. We also wish to put forward the following recommendations for indigenous communities. To continue to take initiatives in the promotion and development of their own languages.
You have to conclude now.
To document their own languages and folklores to ensure its transmittal to the future generations. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you very much, Anjali Daimari of the Asia Caucus. I'd like to call now on Olav Matis Ira from the Arctic Caucus. Olav Matis, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This presentation is given by Arctic Indigenous Caucus. This is our response to the report of the International Expert Group meeting on Indigenous Languages. Inuit and Sami welcome the initiative taken by the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues to deal with the issue of linguistic diversity, the connection between language rights and all other fundamental rights, a concern for the lack of urgency while the majority of all indigenous languages are threatened with extinction, and proposals for revitalization, promotion and protection of indigenous languages. Inuit and Sami also welcome the report from the International Expert Group meeting on Indigenous Languages, which took place here in United Nations headquarters in New York in January this year. This is a promising step forward to celebrate 2008, which has been proclaimed by the General Assembly as the International Year of Languages. We agree that there is a need for concrete public policies for the protection and promotion of indigenous languages, as has been recommended by the Permanent Forum at the 6th session. Madam Chairperson, the Arctic Indigenous Caucus would like to express its agreement with the general overview, the conclusion and recommendation of the expert group meeting. The overview points out that indigenous peoples and their languages are threatened around the world. The loss of indigenous languages signifies not only the loss of traditional knowledge, but also the loss of cultural diversity and spirituality. We are concerned that among some governments, indigenous peoples and the intergovernmental system there is still a lack of awareness of the urgency for policy measures to reverse this trend. The expert group emphasized also the best practices which signify that there are serious initiatives among the indigenous communities to maintain the language and revitalize those. The group also noticed challenges, gaps, and concerns which include neglect in national legislation and policy and are often excluded from the realm of human rights and the human rights implementation as part of cultural rights and also as integral parts of the self-determination and should be viewed within the context of the universal interdependent and complementary nature of human rights. It's crucial to recognize the indigenous people's language rights as pointed out by the report. Language rights must be implemented as a collective and individual right. We confirm that the Nordic authorities accommodate the Sami to a large extent and that in many respects the Sami are less oppressed than many of the world's other indigenous peoples. Nevertheless, we meet challenges every day related to language rights, language use, and education issues. We expect the Nordic states to set the best examples for an indigenous policy which in all aspects complies with human rights ideals and requirements. Thus, there is a need for a rapid ratification of the proposed Nordic Sami Convention. On this basis, among others, Arctic Indigenous Caucus would
please
like to submit the following
please
recommendations.
Now.
We'll hand this
yes, please.
Written version to the Secretariat.
Yes, thank you very much. You hand in the report because we still have a lot to cover. Thank you very much for being understanding. I'd like to call now on Legborsi Saru Piagbara from the Movement for the Survival of the Ogoni People. You have the floor, sir. And a limit to 3 minutes.
Madam Chairperson, thank you for giving me the opportunity to address this August Assembly. I am Legborsi Saru Piagbara of the Movement for the Survival of the Ogoni People. Madam Chair, this discussion about language is coming at the most opportune time in our history, when we are at the major crossroads where we need to call into assistance the profound relationship between cultural diversity and ecological diversity. Language forms one of the greatest expressions of our cultural identities. Our language is connected with our spirituality, with our environment, and with our social well-being. The loss of any language signals not only the loss of a civilization, it is the final funeral rite for the loss of a people. It is against this backdrop, Madam Chair, that we view with great concern the continued actions of the Nigerian government to decimate the languages of the indigenous communities in the country, while at the same time providing state support for the development and study of three majority languages of Yoruba, Igbo, and Hausa. These three majority languages have been made part of the national education curriculum, and the state provides facilities and teachers for them to be taught from primary through universities. These three languages, including English language, are the only ones recognized by the Nigerian Constitution and can be used on the floor of the National Assembly. This treatment cannot be said of indigenous languages like that of the Ogoni people and other indigenous communities in Nigeria. Last year, the government took the further discouraging step of putting these three majority languages on national currencies. Coming on the heels of a recent report that many indigenous languages in Nigeria are on the path to extinction unless urgent steps are taken to rescue them from imminent disappearance from the linguistic map, while almost 23 have actually gone extinct, you can only see why the present discriminatory language development action of the Nigerian government is like a passport to the extinction of the language of the Ogoni people and other indigenous communities in Nigeria. This amounts to cultural genocide. Madam Chair, most of fully supports the recommendation of the International Expert Panel on Language. In addition, we call on UNESCO to develop a more inclusive program of engagement with local communities and indigenous people in countries. We also call on the Permanent Forum, in collaboration with other relevant United Nations agencies, to develop indicators for monitoring language development and survival. We recommend that the Nigerian government set up a comprehensive language revival program, which will include the study of the indigenous languages from primary schools to universities. We also recommend that in most countries where this sort of injustice exists, there should be constitutional reviews and amendments to accommodate the recognition of indigenous languages. We also call on the Nigerian government to respect its international obligations by implementing international covenants and conventions such as ICESCRO, ICPRO, and the 1960 Universal Convention Against Discrimination Education. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'd like to call now on Marcos Big Clouds of the Youth Caucus. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon to you. Hayovat mun mahaka sahologido es mun chaskimalegra hudogalgidos mumen chapoja malegra huswalgido imats mun kanvaskin adeidos. With due respect, we would like to first acknowledge the traditional custodians of this region for allowing us to meet in their respective homeland. We, the Indigenous Youth Caucus, would like to address the UN Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues regarding the urgency of saving and revitalizing our languages. Language is identity, language is history, language is culture, language is education, and language is a bridge between the past, present, and future. Language is vital to the efficacy of our Indigenous being. It gives us the knowledge of our ancestors. Language is not used solely as means of communication. Rather, it encompasses intricate complexities of our identity. Language is essential in shaping our worldviews as Indigenous young people, and we do not deserve, nor can we afford, to walk on this earth without the opportunity to embrace our own languages. We recognize the continuing effects of assimilation, acculturation, colonization, and its counterpart, genocide, through the displacement of generations of Indigenous children around the world, thus leaving our languages in many cases extinct or on the verge thereof. Moreover, we recognize additional contemporary issues of globalization, modernity, industrialization, cultural imperialism, hegemony, various other aspects of capitalism, and the list goes on and on of impositions that are preventing our languages to be revitalized and thus thrive in our respective communities. Our languages are gifts from our ancestors and have evolved in accordance with our traditional philosophical understandings. Thus, the efficacy of our spirituality is contingent upon the perpetuation of Indigenous languages, the ongoing suppression and oppression of Indigenous languages by government states, school systems, and religious institutions must be eradicated and replaced with collective efforts to engage in a resurgence of our treasured languages. This is evident in societies of individuals among us, such as those from Khmer Karom, Baluchistan, and Berber Amazigh in Libya, where people are forbidden to teach their languages, and even right here in the United States, where English-only legislation denies our existence as Indigenous peoples. As you know, according to UNESCO, approximately 600 languages have disappeared in the last century, and up to 90% of the world's languages are likely to disappear before the end of this century. In many countries, 90% of Indigenous languages will be extinct within the next 10 to 50 years. We recognize that a traditional knowledge is often required to be passed down through the Indigenous language of a respective society. Thus, the discourse we have engaged in here regarding climate change and traditional knowledge of the earth can simply be dismissed if the suppression of our languages continues. Madam Chair, with respect to our elders, we are not the leaders of tomorrow. We are the leaders of today. We accept that we will one day assume the leadership roles of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues, and without command of our languages, we will simply be inaccurate representations of Indigenous persons leading our peoples. We will be non-Indigenous minds trapped in Indigenous bodies. Now is the time for our elders and leaders to work with our young Indigenous peoples to reinvigorate our languages, the gateway through which we can further explore our traditions and cultures. And lastly, we respectively offer the following recommendations. One, for nation states to affirm the validity of indigenous languages. 2, for culturally sensitive educational programs to be implemented in indigenous communities, excluding imposed Western pedagogical curriculums and standards. And 3, for nation states to fully implement Article 13 and 14 of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And 4, for the UN to recognize the Indigenous Youth Caucus as effective and intrinsic parts of the discourse and developments of Indigenous language revitalization efforts. Madam Chair, we thank you for your time. Madal Goshti.
Thank you very much. I'll now call on Honorable Lino Vilca Delgado, the National Senator of the Bolivian Republic. You have 3 minutes, sir. You have the floor.
Señora Presidenta, señores miembros del Foro Permanente de todo nuestro planeta Tierra, hermanos y hermanas indígenas, reciben un saludo revolucionario del Congreso de Bolivia, que a su vez, sin pensar dos veces, como congresista indígena aymara, hemos aprobado la Declaración Universal de los Derechos Humanos en ese valioso Congreso de Bolivia. Bolivia, por primera vez en nuestra historia, ha asumido un indígena presidente constitucional de Bolivia, Evo Morales Ayma, y con una 65% parlamentarios indígenas que hoy en Bolivia legislamos. Es un gran avance y logro de los movimientos indígenas en Bolivia. Nuestro país comprende 77% población indígena y a la vez con 36 nacionalidades. Y un afroboliviano comprendemos 37 nacionales, en el cual en la nueva constitución política del Estado en este momento y estamos a punto de inaugurar un nuevo Estado plurinacional. Ahí entran las lenguas indígenas. Las lenguas indígenas que desde el Estado, la alfabetización no debe ser a los indígenas en el idioma castellano. También en el sector social dominante o la clase media decimos, también tiene que ser alfabetizado con nuestro propio idioma. Es la política de Estado de educación en Bolivia. Hermanos y hermanas indígenas de la Madre Tierra, todos los pueblos indígenas hemos vivido extranjeros en nuestro propio territorio y tierra. Por eso, hay ratos hemos sido derrotados, pero no vencidos, hermanos y hermanas. Por eso hoy estamos presentes como pueblos indígenas en este momento, hablando nuestro idioma. Y también les quiero decir, hoy los pueblos indígenas, nos toca recuperar nuestros lagos sagrados. La tecnología nos ha usurpado. Tenemos que recuperar nuestros cerros sagrados, nuestros ríos sagrados, nuestras montañas, nuestras pucaras, nuestras huacas. Eso tenemos que recuperar para que la energía vuelva. Así nosotros salvemos la planeta Tierra. Y nosotros como pueblo de Bolivia, preocupados de una cosa muy importante, pretensiones de prohibición de acuñico de coca. Para nosotros la coca es vida. Y por eso en este foro he tenido la valentía. Esta coca que nosotros acuñicamos es nuestra sabiduría, nuestro conocimiento, nuestra energía y espiritual, un reencuentro con la Pachamama. Por eso nosotros desde aquí pedimos a las Naciones Unidas que el jefe que levante esa pretensión de hacer recomendación de no pistear ni siquiera tomar el mate de coca. Por eso nosotros estamos presentes aquí. Y finalmente, porque el tiempo es premura, queremos, por intermedio de este presente foro, nuestra demanda ante Junta Internacional de Fiscalización de Estupefacientes, JIFE, es que se recomendamos el uso del consumo tradicional de nuestra sagrada hoja de coca, uno de los derechos fundamentales del pueblo indígena que Bolivia, hoja por hoja, por historia, hemos pescado. Ustedes sepan, La coca no es cocaína. Es una planta, cualquier planta en el mundo que existe en este momento. Hoja milenaria, porque gracias a esta sagrada hoja de coca, nuestro hermano presidente Evo Morales hoy es presidente, el primer presidente constitucional de los pueblos indígenas en Bolivia. Y queremos, para finalizar, un tema muy importante. Señor presidenta, para finalizar, quiero mencionar dos temas de mucha importancia de que Bolivia. Bolivia, solicitamos a este octavo foro internacional presente de los pueblos indígenas la extradición del expresidente de Bolivia, Gonzalo Sánchez de Lozada, que hoy vive protegido en los Estados Unidos, que sea extraditado a Bolivia por cargo, por delito de atrocidad, de genocidio y masacre en octubre de 2003. Cerca de 100 muertos y 400 heridos que nos ha cobrado. Por eso queremos justicia y por eso es mi presencia como parlamentario y víctima de los pueblos indígenas que hemos tenido en los aymaras, en la ciudad de tanto quechuas en el país de Bolivia. Y también queremos mencionar en este momento, ratificar la solicitud de nuestro viceministro.
Sí, ya,
con esto concluyo. La solicitud que veedora de la comisión de foro que se constituya en nuestro país para que los derechos fundamentales de los pueblos indígenas, en este momento el racismo ha resaltado, para la clase dominante, de la clase que nos han oprimido, para ellos somos indios, somos macacos, somos así nominativos nos tiene. Por eso queremos justicia y gracias a este foro internacional. Gracias, muchísimas gracias, señora presidenta.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, the senator from Bolivia, Mr. Lino Vilca Delgado. I'd like now to call on the last speaker, Mr. May Armand McKenzie, who will speak on behalf of Congress of Aboriginal Peoples, Innu Nation Institute. You have the floor, sir.
Thanks so much, Madam Chairperson. I won't read a statement. I had a statement, but I won't read it. But I would like maybe to exchange some views, submit some respectful views in regard to the work of the Permanent Forum. I was part of, for many years, every year I attended this Permanent Forum meeting for the seventh year now. And I was, of course, part of the team, negotiation teams with the Indigenous representative on the, the terms of reference of the permanent forum on indigenous issues. And I believe probably I will convey many observations of my indigenous colleagues. And I respectfully submit this view to you, of course, Madam Chairperson. And one of them is this one. When the terms of reference of this permanent forum was drafted, we were in partnership with governments and states as equal partners. And I seen that for the last maybe 2 hours, there was about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 government representatives, and now 9 government representatives who took the floor. And it was the same exercise this morning. And I voicing some of concerns of my indigenous colleagues. I know that we want to have a constructive dialogue with states and with members of the permanent forum and indigenous peoples, and I'm very in favor of a constructive dialogue. But 8 governments' representatives, which, of course, there were indigenous representatives in the government's delegations, but many of us here are not government representatives. We are representatives of peoples and indigenous peoples. And I think we should bear in mind the fair, equal amount of sharing the time allowed for each of us to have at least 3 minutes in speaking term. Okay. It's a respectful presentation. Now, I will conclude on this, Madam Chairperson, I will conclude on this, on questioning two aspects of Canada's representation, because I'm from Canada, I'm from the Innu people, and I have chiefs here from my community who are from the Innu. And I wonder, there is in the Canada statement, they say that they have $5 million for indigenous languages, at least for initiatives for the protection of indigenous languages. What it means for our people, for each individual, it means for our organization, for our people, $43,000, which is about $2.50 for the protection, for the promotion, and the conservation of our indigenous language. That's what it means, $2.50. That's one thing. And if Canada was so progressive in terms of protecting indigenous languages, I wonder why they failed to ratify, to accept, and to vote in favor of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Especially the provisions dealing with language education. What is so threatening about protecting our indigenous languages and promoting and defending our indigenous languages? I wonder why Canada is so afraid of accepting those provisions on indigenous languages and cultures. Thank you, Madam Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you, Armand McKenzie from the Congress of American Indians. We have reached our time limit now. We are very cognizant of the point that you raised, and we would indeed discuss this among ourselves. And I hope you will be able to also engage the Canadian delegation to further discuss the issue that you have raised. Thank you very much, Armand. I'll now give the floor first to our secretary to make some announcement before I will end the session.
Thank you, madam. I just have two very quick announcements. One is that Global Indigenous Women's Caucus will meet Monday morning in this room at 8 o'clock a.m. And the second announcement is that there is an event that is going to take place here tomorrow. So we ask all the participants of this meeting, including the podium, to please clear your desks. If you need any written material, take it with you. You cannot leave anything because it will be discarded. And finally, from all of us, I want to thank our interpreters who are working overtime, giving us these extra 10 minutes. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much. We have reached the time limit for this meeting. I just would like to say that the 8th meeting of the Permanent Forum will be held on Monday morning at 10 a.m. in Conference Room 2. And I'd like to also remind my dear colleagues from the members of the Permanent Forum that we are going to have our meeting tomorrow at 10 a.m. at the Conference Room of the 19th floor in DC2 building. So with that, we would like to wish you all a good day for tomorrow, those who are going to hold activities here, and we will see you on Monday. We shall continue with the list of speakers for item 4A to F from 10 to 11 on Monday. So those who are still inscribed in the list, please make sure to be here. The meeting is adjourned.